Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the July 21st, 2015 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I would ask anyone that has electronic devices such as cell phones, please silence them. That includes legislators. If we should have an emergency, there is an exit to my right at the back of the room and to my left at the front of the room. If there were a fire, please don't use the elevator. I wondered if folks would please stand and recite the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. May we have the roll call of members, please? I don't know why.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
Here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
I am here.
Ms. Kiefer? Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey has asked to be excused. Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa will be here later this evening. Mr. Lane?
Here.
We have 12 members present.
We have quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'd like at this point to call Legislator Jim Dennis forward, and I believe he has a presentation for Distinguished Youth tonight.
Michael, I'm expecting four members, right? And
We can postpone a little bit if that would be
better.
Yeah,
let's do that. And if we start the privilege of the floor, I would hope that we may interrupt the privilege and then do the presentation and get back to the privilege. Would that work for everyone?
Sure. I'm hearing nods.
Okay.
How's that?
Good. Thank you.
All about you. I don't believe we have an executive session tonight, John or Joe. Any need for that? All right, then let's go to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity for members of the public to speak to us on any subject. We ask if you're going to speak to please sign and send up a blue card. And on the blue card, the rules of the privilege of the floor are set out. We do have a time clock on my left over here, which will count down 3 minutes, which is the allotted time, after which there would be an audible signal. We ask you, if you haven't concluded by then, to please conclude. When you speak, you're agreeing to a three-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor, and you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. So anyone who would like to speak, I have several blue cards. The first card I have tonight is Pete Myers and then Joe Harlan. Pete.
Thanks, Mike. My name is Pete Myers. I'm the director of the Tompkins County Workers' Center here in Ithaca, and I want to speak just very briefly on the old library project. I understand it's I don't know much about the project. It's probably a complicated project, but it's been brought to my attention that the Franklin Project has made a strong commitment to paying a living wage to both during the development of the project, construction workers, which we would hope they would be making a living wage anyways, as well as to building maintenance, which would include custodial and medical staff through the life of whatever is developed there. So I just really want to speak on behalf of that, and I know it's a complicated decision, but living wage is not an unimportant issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe Harlan?
My name is Joel Harlan. I'm from Newfield. I forgot a few things to say last time I was here about growth. I used to live in Horseheads. I went to schools district there. I used to live in Elmira. Elmira is my hometown. I was born in Ironton. All right. I see what's going on down there that should be going on up here also. Making spinoffs off these colleges and put it right up from Lansing all the way up to Cortland. You got four colleges. All right. Sure, they sold, a lot of farmers sold their land. They made millions of dollars, and they're laughing their way all to the bank. One happens to be, you guys know, is Smith. They called him Cadillac Smith because he bought Cadillac all that money. Then he ran for office and became a New York senator off the money made. All right. Now you got a Corning glass plant down there also, a pretty good size, a mile away from Community Square on the same road. You can go up to Harris Hill, too, and that way. Well, you got a lot of manufacturers, a lot of restaurants, and you got a lot of stores and a big mall. You know, it's a destination for everything. You got Air Museum at the airport. That thing's, when I was down there, it was dead. You know, Horseheads and stuff, and Big Flats was cow pastures and cornfields. So there wasn't nothing down there, but now it's growing. And that's what we need to do in the future, is think about up there, Lansing to Cortland. It's flat land, no hills around it, and you got a chance to get everything what people want up that road because you're running out of room down here and around the hills. It's all flat land. It's just like down there, Big Flats. We can make it grow. But you guys want to run money out of the county by just, oh, we got to worry about the trees, the tree huggers. You got to worry about the environment. You got to worry about the farmers. And you got to worry about the protesters against development. And also the ones that protect the green and the trees. You got that opponents coming at you. So you're going to face a stiff opposition. Well, hey, money talks. You know what walks, don't you? If you don't get this stuff in here. Because there's not much, the city is not much more you can do to it because it's almost filled up. And you've got other areas, but that's a perfect area to start what Big Flats and Horse has done. Now I got to go over to the city hall and for development over there. So I got to run over there now. I'll see you later on.
Thank you. We have Tom Hanna, then Ann Sullivan.
It's always nice to follow Joel. Okay, can you hear me now? My name is Tom Hanna. I'm here tonight as a member of the DeWitt Park Neighborhood Association, and I know that you've heard from us before. I wanted to extemporize a little bit with you on things that have been going on in my mind and also hope that you've had a chance to see some communications that I've tried to send around about the issue. I'm going to just express that I'm in favor of the Franklin Stream proposal. I'm influenced a little bit by the fact that I've been working in the energy field for quite a while now and can even look way back early in my career when I got involved with that topic when I was at Cornell. What I wanted to mention about that was just to let you know, because you may not have heard, that besides the wonderful grant that the county got for the New York Prize to develop microgrids here in our community, there's another New York Prize that was won that is directly here in the heart of New York, in the heart of Ithaca, New York. It's going to be a north side district and a south side district, and I think it's going to be affecting me where I live in DeWitt Mall. Of course, this building that we're talking about, the old library, is in that same neighborhood. And I was really impressed when I saw the proposal to keep 90% of the embodied energy in that structure and work on that as the basis, and that's really why I am so supportive of Franklin Stream. But I saw the way you voted the last time when you voted 6-6, and I haven't had a full indication that many of you have changed your view on the subject from the position that you took before. And I wanted to just spend a minute talking about what happens if this thing somehow gets to the point where you can't make a decision. I'd be concerned personally if this property were just put up on the open market. The reason for that is my strong connection with neighborhood. I'm strongly connected to the neighborhood I'm in today. I was strongly connected to College Town when I lived in that neighborhood for 43 years. I saw lots of development there. I'm seeing lots of development downtown. One thing that I would suggest is among the alternatives that you might consider is that this really is a city property. There must be some way in which the county and the city could work, where there could even be a transfer. The county taxpayers could get the money for the value of the property, and the city could go through a process, the one that they're going to do anyway, to manage the development of the land. I hope that kind of idea and many others will come to you if you can't make a decision of your own. Thank you.
Thank you. Ann Sullivan, then Daniel Keough.
Hello, I'm Ann Sullivan. I live in the city of Ithaca, and if I'm feeling like it's Groundhog Day, I can imagine how you're feeling. I'm not going to go all the reasons, but I know you are divided fairly equally. I am a citizen. I have no connection with either Lifelong or with Travis Hyde or with Stream. I'm simply here because I'm trying to talk about what's best for the city that I've lived in for over 30 years. I think if you look at the Travis Hyde project, it will satisfy and do something for three groups of people in Ithaca. Travis Hyde, of course, who are developers, who want to build apartment buildings and make money. That's their job, and I don't have any problem with that. Lifelong, which is struggling, which apparently is going to get a large amount of money for their property, and its board of directors has an obligation to Lifelong. And then, of course, there's Holt Architects, who I assume will also profit from the project. These are the three entities that will profit from it. And I think if you look at the balance, the harm that will be done by going with this project and not going with Stream greatly outweighs this. And I'm not going to talk about the living wage and other things you all know I feel. I'm going to talk about a sense of place. I've lived in Ithaca for over 30 years. And I think every town has iconic sacred places. Enfield, you have the bridge. In Dryden, you have the wonderful Southworth Library. In Groton, where I spent a lot of time when I worked at TC3, you have the high school that became first the original TC3 and then apartments, and those wonderful rows of Victorians. In Ithaca, the DeWitt Park is one of our sacred, iconic places. If you look at it, it's an historical museum of architecture. We have the 19th century row houses. We have the wonderful 20th century apartment building. We have the churches. We have the old library, which was the new library when I took my kid there when she was 5. Last Friday, I took my grandson, Oscar, to DeWitt Park as we were going to the new library. And I explained to him, the building in Travis Hyde is so way out of proportion. It's like building an 8-story apartment building next to the Southworth Library. It's like putting a McDonald's next to the bridge. And it's also a sacred space. I'm not a veteran, but my parents were. Both veterans of World War II. I graduated from high school in 1965, so a lot of young people that I graduated with went to Vietnam, and some of them didn't come back. I went over to that park before. I go to that park twice a year, at Memorial Day and Veterans Day. And I think of my parents, who are both veterans. I think of the people I know, Chris Bordoni, who went to Ithaca High is his last name. That's a sacred spot for us in a way, an iconic place. And those of you who don't live in Ithaca, please empathize with us. And please think what that spot means to us. And think about how you would feel if someone were making a decision about those iconic sacred places, including Meyer Point in Lansing, and why we are so hopeful that you won't break our hearts by putting a building that just doesn't belong there.
Thank you. Daniel Keogh, then Joyce Stillman.
Hello, my name is Daniel Keogh. I live in the city of Ithaca. I'm in whatever project you choose, I'm hopeful you'll take a look at the RFP again and realize that building large amounts of parking in the downtown area is not appropriate. If we take a look at that and we have more space for either housing or green space or just space for people, I'm hoping you take a look at this. And also I just wanted to say that I'm very much in favor of the Franklin Stream proposal in reusing the current building. This downtown space is not in a rural area. It's an important downtown corner, and I hope we take in mind that not everyone will have a car, not everyone wants to have a car and drive to this location. Thank you.
Thank you. Joyce Stillman, then Graham Gillespie.
I'm nervous, so forgive me if I have to look at what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, and can you point the microphone at you, please?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, that's better.
Can you hear me now? Okay. Well, first of all, now, I'm an artist. Okay, I'm trying. But when I'm going to be a politician, I'll remember this. Okay, so I'm an artist, and I love looking at the library. I think it's a beautiful building. I love the art in the front of the building. And as you've heard, a lot of other people do, too. And I think, as you've also heard, this is part of our heritage. And it would be a shame to destroy our artistic heritage for some modern building. I think that's very short-sighted, and in my opinion, it's morally inexcusable. What if they decided a few years ago that the Independence Hall was just, a rickety old building, and they didn't need it anymore, and they wanted to put something more modern there? How would that have been for us now? You don't know what's going to happen. And maybe Jesus is not old enough to be a heritage yet, but in 100 years it will, or even in 10 years. And I feel like it is right now. I enjoyed every minute I spent there. So I think that rather than selling off our public property, you guys should listen to the owners, which is all the members of Tompkins County, and you should work to protect what we have here, which I gather is the Franklin Project. And I have no interest in this. I live a few blocks away. I don't know any developers. I don't know any builders, although I know of people like that. Anyway, I doubt that the citizens of Tompkins County, if you held a referendum, would approve of selling off our common property to a for-profit real estate developer and then pay our taxes for those services of the people that he's going to have in there to ensure his private profits? Where's the creativity around here? This is a shameful enterprise.
Thank you. Graham Gillespie, then Brian Wilbur.
Hi, Graham Gillespie, Holt Architects. McDonald's, that really hurt. But I wanted to, maybe speak a little bit towards the discussion that's been going on. And in particular, Lifelong, I think you've heard certainly from Lifelong themselves. And you've seen the material in the packets, both in the public packet and in the confidential packet. So the nuts and bolts of it. When we looked at the RFP, or actually even going back to the RFEI, it was clear to us that Lifelong was going to be important. It's right on the site. We understood from past associations what they do there. And really, it was clear to us that as part of the satisfaction of RFP, both in the preamble and the selection criteria where it talks about mixed use is commercial, public purpose, or not-for-profit in addition to residential. And in the actually selection criteria, it talks about responsiveness to community needs, such as a community organization. It seemed unnatural for us to include that in the overall package. And it also worked well in terms of our design approach to the site and the project. Sure, the price, there's been some discussion about the price, and, it's based on market value. I think most people would like market value for whatever they're selling, just as the county asked for that for the parcel. And in return, they get if they're an equity partner, then they get rent-free space and a portion of the profits. Or if they're a tenant, then they get below market rent. That was all part of the overall scheme to make it viable for everybody, a fair return on the investment for everybody. I don't think there's any mystery there. There's no shadiness involved with that. It's the market. And it seems like a really good private sector solution to the issue. Not to add it to a taxpayer a burden, but to have a private sector solution. So that's all I wanted to say about that right now. The only other thing is I don't know what's going to happen tonight, if there's going to be votes or not. I do think that the process has gone on long enough. There's been enough dollars expended. I think we owe it to yourselves, to the process, to the county, to all the public who's come and spoken, that the vote be by the full legislature, if at all possible, understanding that that might jeopardize the timeline. But it is a very important issue, and I think that would be appropriate. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Brian Wilbur? I'm sorry. Jim, do you want to take your thing?
Yeah, I, after Brian, then if we can get a little break, I think we can do that.
All right.
Thank you.
I'll do that. I've got three or four more cards. Brian Wilbur, and then we'll take the Distinguished Youth Award, and then we'll finish up with public privilege.
Hi. My name is Brian Wilbur. I'm president of the Board of Directors of Lifelong. I debated with myself about whether or not I should say anything tonight, and so here I am. You know who won. I've become increasingly uncomfortable individually with the way the process has started to move forward, and that is because it seemed like who was going to tie up with Lifelong was getting more weight than it maybe it should be. We've talked about these things before, but the Board of Lifelong has a very singular focus, and that's to look out for and do what is best for Lifelong. This board, City Common Council, has its own focus, which is much broader, talking about Tompkins County or the City of Ithaca's communities whose interest and well-being you must look out for. The decisions the Board of Lifelong have made have been made with the idea that we're trying to find the best solution for Lifelong. Lifelong, as you know, benefits from the stewardship of prior boards and prior executive directors, and the properties that we are situated on are owned free and clear, and they represent a substantial asset for us. What we don't have at this point, and we've known this for a while, and we've known we have needed to change, are liquid assets. And part of our ability to look forward and to move forward hinge on the ability to transfer those fixed assets of property into liquid assets that we continue to run our programs with. If I don't have you confused yet, bear with me, I'll do my best. So when we made our memorandum of understanding with Travis Hyde, it was done with the idea that what they were presenting to us was something that through further discussion and negotiations at some point, we could continue to see whether or not it worked for Lifelong. We're prepared to do the same thing with the other several developers that presented themselves. And as it worked out, we weren't able to come up with that same kind of sense from those other developers that we could move forward with any kind of commitment. So I'm here just to say that our perspective is Lifelong. Your perspective is something different. I'm hoping that you will make your decision based upon the larger perspective, and Lifelong will continue to move, and things can change dramatically in that process, meaning that we have to look very seriously at getting some liquid assets to keep our operation going, which puts probably the possibility up that we may have to look at selling options for our property independently.
Thank you. We'll break now to do the our very important function, which is the Distinguished Youth Award. Jim Dennis from Ulysses and Enfield will be doing that. If there's anyone else who wants to speak on privilege of the floor, this is an opportunity to sign a blue card and send it up, and then we'll finish up with that. Yes, Carol.
Mike, I got the feeling that Brian Wilbur was not quite done, and I wondered if after we do this, whether, you know, since that has been such an important topic, whether either now or later in the meeting, we might have the opportunity to have him finish whatever it was he was.
Anyway, okay. we can take a look at that. Jim Dennis.
Thank you. Good evening. I am here to present the Distinguished Youth Award to a group of young people from the Trumansburg Central School District, and three of the five people are seated over there. And let me just say their names. I received a letter, or the Leds received a letter from Chris Bennett, who works for Tompkins County Youth Services, telling about this group. The group is called SAD, and it is not SAD in the traditional sense, Students Against Drunk Driving. It's SAD, it's Students Against Destructive Decisions. And they have broadened the definition over time. We have three of the young people here with us. We have their advisor, Don Kucharak, and Mike McGuire, who's my neighbor, and his lovely wife, Char. Mike has promised not to come to the microphone and say anything about our neighborhood relationship, but he is the superintendent of the school. And at any rate, let me have the people who are here come up. Jacob is here. Come on up, please. And Luke Parker, Zielinski, and Julia. No, Michelle. Yes, please. Sorry. Michelle Peterson, Luke Parker, Zielinski, and Jacob Kazarin, and he's the salutatorian of the class. How about the rest of you? Are valedictorians, anything like that? Top five? No, that's good. Let me give you this award, and we have other prizes for you here. It says the 2015 July Distinguished Youth Award, an award that emphasizes truly inspirational and exceptional youth. It's got the five individuals' names on it, brought to you in part by the following: Bang the Ambulance, Tompkins County Legislature, Specialty Trophy and Awards of Dryden, Purity Ice Cream, and the Cougar Radio Group. So if you would hold that. And we have it's the emergency kit. And we have lovely T-shirts.
Microphone, Jim.
We have lovely T-shirts and gift cards. And so they're Purity Ice Cream gift cards, so you can, you know, take those out and spread them out. We have from 107.7
rewind. I'm after one of these, but I'm too old to get one. So anyway, and in here is, well, you can figure it out, all right? There's a whole bunch of things. At any rate, as a former teacher and clearly a resident of Trumansburg, it is really wonderful to see young people like this and do the things that they have been doing in their program at Trumansburg. And I'm going to ask each one of them to say a few words about why they got involved, what their future plans are, and those kinds of things. So go ahead, Michelle.
I just wanted to say it's really enjoyable being a part of SAD Club at school. I was with SAD Club for 2 years now. It's really rewarding to finally be recognized for all of the hard work that we do with school, and because high schoolers kind of, your peers give you the cold shoulder every now and then, like, oh, it's just SAD Club again. But we have our moments. We get out there, we get our word out with the positive decisions and all those things. So it's rewarding, and I'm very thankful for being a part of SAD Club for sure. I'll be off to Nazareth College in the fall studying speech pathology, so I'm very excited for that as well. So yeah, thank you.
So the reason that I joined SAD Club, this is my first, last year was my first year, and honestly, like, I had a lot of friends in it, so that was one big plus, but it was really an interesting way of educating yourself. Thank you, Ms. Kuchvac, for that, and then being able to educate your classmates about it, because what we, like, you put posters around, and we created the posters, and, like, having people see people read them and understand, like, what we got to understand firsthand. And we get to decide what we do with that. And Ms. Kritchak is so, so lenient with what we do. It's great, because we really get to decide what we want to do. So I'm going off to Syracuse University next year, and I am studying clinical psychology. So thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Jacob Kazarin, and I've been a part of SAD Club for 1 year. This has been my only year. And I debated over whether I should have done it last year or during my junior year, so I would have had 2 years during it. But I was in student council, and I have all those AP classes that you have to deal with. But I really kicked myself for not doing it last year, because I had the same workload this year, and I decided to go ahead, take SAD Club, and it was a real treat. Thank you, Mrs. Kuchvac. And I really joined it because my friends were in it at first, and I was like, that's not too bad. And I really found that it really spoke to my other side of me, that I really enjoy helping other people, and especially my classmates, because I love each and every one of them. We only have a class of like 72 people, so I get to know every single one of them, all their first names, last names, what they're about. And it really... really touched me that I could join this group and teach myself and the ones around me about destructive decisions and how to educate them and to feel that, to make sure that by educating them, I'm making it a safer place at Trumansburg. So, and I'll be off to RIT, majoring in computer science and minoring in music. So thank you.
I'm merely a county legislator, let me just mention a couple things that they've been involved in. They have hosted a number of events, campaigned to discourage texting while driving, a stand-up day against bullying, use phone collections, social norms campaign to raise awareness of drug use, and they participated in the Ithaca Festival in May. And this was from the Troubadour, which is a school newspaper, I think, in June of 2014. But anyway, I am so pleased that you all came and we were able to give you this award. Thank you so much for coming.
If things like that don't inspire us, I don't know what does. Let's return to privilege of the floor for the public. I'm trying to understand. I have Elizabeth Reed next, and then I also have Anna Kellis who wanted to speak for Elizabeth Reed. Can someone enlighten me what's happening there? Is Elizabeth not able to speak, or what are we saying tonight? She's gone too. Okay. All right, we'll move on. I have Joe Boyes, and then I have Cheryl Wehner.
Hi, I'm Joe Boyes, and thank you for letting me speak. My wife, Sandy, and I have been living and working here in Ithaca for about the past 4 years. We're retired old teachers, professors, and we do a lot of work with the lower-income people. And I'll be really brief. If I could read the editorial that you and the mayor wrote about a week ago, I mean, that's beautiful. And for me to think you're the government and you represent and you are to serve all the people, and to see you think you have a building there when they write that there's a great shortage of housing for lower-income people. One of our people is getting ready to be evicted and be on the street at the end of this month because they sold his building and he's being put out. To me, considering 20 condos for 60 apartments that could be maybe lower priced to serve some of the lower income people in this city, it just baffles my mind that this to me is a no-brainer. That read that lady's editorial. I would just ask you that. That's all I'd say. Please read her editorial, and please give some consideration to the citizens of this city and to what this lady and the mayor have to say. And I think they know it a lot better than I do. And we do a program for Lifelong at Titus Towers to help those people stay healthy and strong and keep their balance and serve them. And I would ask you to please serve the people of Ithaca City and Tompkins County. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Cheryl Wehner? I think it's Wehner.
This is intended to be published by the DeWitt Park Neighborhood Association. We are reading it into the record. There are two points of concern to many members of the community that may be unfairly influencing the decision-making process by the legislators. First, although the incorporation of Lifelong is not one of the stated selection criteria in the request for proposals from the county legislator, it has become the backbone of the decision for many of the legislators. Most of the development teams use the original selection criteria as the basis of their design concepts. This creates a huge disadvantage to any developer who did not include Lifelong, particularly given that Lifelong signed an agreement exclusively with Travis Hyde. The Travis Hyde and Holt team has been working closely with Lifelong for several years, and based on this long-standing relationship, built an exclusive agreement with Lifelong for their proposal. They offered a significant sum to Lifelong for their property to secure this partnership. Franklin recognized the importance of Lifelong to the community and, independent of their official proposal to the county, submitted a proposal to Lifelong. According to the Lifelong board, they are still considering Franklin's proposal, although to date they have only created a memorandum of understanding agreement with Travis Hyde. In effect, Lifelong has become the cornerstone of the decision for the library and not necessarily what is best for the library site itself and for the community. There's a three-member building committee on the Lifelong board that is determining the fate of the library, since many of the legislators are making their choices based on what Lifelong decides. If Lifelong is the cornerstone of the library decision, then a new RFP should be created that explicitly states this. Every developer should have the opportunity to design a concept that includes Lifelong. Another option, if Lifelong is so critical to the county, then its survival should be the center of its own discussion, with the key consideration being what is best for Lifelong, and separate it from the discussion of what is best for the library site. The most troubling result of the current legislative action is the potential for a lasting negative impact on the relationship between Lifelong and the community, an unfortunate outcome that is already manifesting. Given that a huge public and city government outcry has been raised in support of Franklin, making a public decision in the name of Lifelong pits Lifelong squarely against the community. In the legislative session on July 7th, a majority of speakers during the public comment period asked the legislators to untangle Lifelong from their decision-making process for the library site. Thank you.
Thank you. Anna Kellis.
Hi, I know you've all heard from me a bunch of times, and I actually wasn't planning on speaking tonight, but this is Elizabeth Reed was supposed to speak on part of DPNA, and she is not feeling well, so she had to leave. So this is on her behalf. And this is in a continuation of the DPNA letter. A second point of concern for the old library deliberation is the modification of any proposal after the submission deadline that may unfairly and potentially unethically affect the selection process. All proposals submitted are concepts, and any project selected would have the opportunity to work closely with the legislature and the community to create the best possible rendering for the site. At this point, modifications of a proposal based on public scrutiny is a manipulation of the process and will result in the deepest pockets winning the bid rather than the team who developed the best proposal based on the identified selection criteria. According to legislator Mike Lane, during the most recent Old Library Committee meeting, both the Travis Hyde and Franklin projects have made significant modifications to their proposal. And according to this statement, any modifications should therefore be considered. However, this is not correct information, and the DeWitt Park Neighborhood Association is officially asking that the meeting minutes be updated to reflect the correct information. The Franklin team has not made a single modification to the original proposal they submitted to the RFP for the library site. They've made modifications to the separate proposal they gave to Lifelong for their property in response to a legislative focus on Lifelong. In contrast, Travis Hyde has continuously modified their proposal through the review period. After a recent third-party assessment of their proposed combined heat and power energy source, the Travis Hyde team was informed of significant miscalculations in their models and subsequently changed their proposed energy source to air source heat pumps. They have added solar panels to their proposal and recently started a media campaign stating that they now plan to save the foundation despite a significant design disparity between the existing building and their proposed model. They're now proposing solar panels on the roof where previously it was a simple water catchment system. These are all beautiful additions, and these are things that we would love to see any building do once the bid is approved, but doing this process before a building has been selected is the concern. All of the modifications and additions to this proposal are features that were originally in the Franklin proposal that was a response to the RFP. This is a further evidence of the quality and thoughtfulness of the Franklin concept that we would like to have considered. The DeWitt Park Neighborhood Association has asked that the legislature reject any new information presented past the RFP deadline and during the formal public meetings held by the county. This will ensure selection of the best overall concept for the community rather than selection of the team most willing and able to expend additional funds on continued concept modification to the project selected by the legislature. It is important to the preservation of the DeWitt Park neighborhood that the voice of the people be heard and that the integrity of the selection process be maintained. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any municipal official tonight that wants to speak to us? I don't see one. Then we'll go to privilege of the floor for legislators. Anyone like to speak tonight? Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. This has been an interesting process for me. I've received emails from people, and I won't name names, but over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and they've changed, and they have added new facts that I know are not facts, and it's stunning, some of the things that I've read over the last couple of weeks. And it's a very simple process for me. We have two developers. One developer was pointed out tonight as trying to make money. The other one wasn't, but they both are. They're in it to earn money. I mean, that's the name of the game. If you're a developer and you're not trying to earn money, then you're really not a developer. So the Lifelong has been dragged through the mud, sort of, or the dust throughout all this. And I think both of the developers have tried to deal with that. And whether it came 20 minutes after the other one, it really doesn't matter. Because and there are those people who are going to be disappointed in what I say, but both developers have no skin in the game at all. One developer is hoping to get a grant a year from now or 9 months from now. The other developer is going to charge rent to Lifelong over a period of time, but they are going to buy a building, I believe, or pay Lifelong for that. So that kind of balances itself out, except the one is a, you know, a wish that they're going to get a grant to be able to do what they say they're going to do. And what concerns me, or what my issues are a couple of things. One, I want the most money for the land for that we own for county taxpayers. Number two, I want the most taxes that can be collected out of the building that happens to be there. Or, you know, within a reasonable amount of money. That's what it's about. And I would like to see Lifelong in the mix somewhere. Right now, for me, Travis Hyde does the best job for putting them in the mix. And, you know, so that's sort of where I am today. I will be there 2 weeks from now or a month from now, and unless something drastic, some new information comes to us that makes me change my mind. So that's where I am.
Others want to speak.
I mean, we're actually...
Nate?
Are we talking about this?
We're a privilege of the floor.
But we have resolutions, right?
There will be resolutions later, yes.
I'll wait until that.
All right. Other hands. Dan, then Dave, then Carol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to give you an update about an issue that we haven't heard about in a while, which was something that this legislature took action on in this budget cycle, providing money to start up a van pool in West Danby. This was following the termination of bus service from Tioga County through West Danby. And what happened was that a lot of time went by between the time that we said yes and the time that TCAT and the van pool provider was able to sign a contract. And during that time, most of the people in West Danby found alternative ways of getting to work and doing the other things they were planning on doing with the van pool. So unfortunately, at this time, we do not have enough people to start up the van pool in West Danby. I'm considering it a good idea that just had bad timing. So that being said, if there is anyone, you know, listening or if anyone knows of people in West Danby or Newfield along that State Route 3496 corridor that thinks they might someday be interested in this kind of service, and I don't know who you are yet, then please do let me know who you are. And if at some time in the future there do seem to be enough people to start this, then we can potentially open this issue again. But I just wanted to update you that, unfortunately, the van pool is not happening.
Thanks, Dan. That's unfortunate. Dave McKenna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to invite everybody to Newfield Old Home Days this weekend. There'll be a parade, chicken barbecue, mini booths, and so on and so forth. So please come up and enjoy yourselves.
All right. Lots of things going on. Carol Chalk, then Kathy Luz Herrera.
Oh, I wanted to give this year's thanks to the people of Trumansburg for putting up with the annual 25th annual community party that was started on a wish and a prayer and a dream 25 years ago by the Donna the Buffalo Band, which is grassroots. And think back to the perception back then of the, you know, this was going to be a bunch of hippies coming and somehow destroying our community, and give thanks to a group that had a vision and that surmounted a lot of community obstacles and questions about what the impact would be, and pull in disparate sections of the community to work together. I mean, yeah, nothing's perfect, but to create a space where there could be a vision of how our community across generations, which is now three generations of people were there, across geography, across types of people, come out and still celebrate every year, rain or shine. I happen to be there on the shiny day for the most part, and across types of music, pulling in everybody from types of music, and I'm going to leave some out, from the Louisiana Bayou to Native American First Peoples to over the years of Eskimo throat singers, from soul, Little Richard, you know, really old music, roots of American blues, bluegrass, reggae to rock. This year, I particularly enjoyed running into Mike Sigler, entering with his daughter. First time attendee. I'm looking forward to hearing your whether it was lived up or down to your expectations. And it was fun, you know, to see you in another context with short sleeves on. So reggae to rock, I particularly enjoyed hearing the Family Stone and reconnecting with the meaning of those songs that go way back, and the issues that are still with us today, the foresight, the, you know, stand with your community, stand with what's going on in the world. Everyday people matter, family affair, because the families were all there. And my one regret is that I missed this year the hometown band. I heard Don of the Buffalo, and the fireworks were great, and sorry to Trumansburg that they were started so later than they were supposed to, because that was very late at night for that much noise. But Positive Friction is my favorite song of theirs, and I didn't get to stay to hear them sing it. And I've been sitting here thinking about the title of that song and its message to us. I mean, there's various layers of meanings to that song. Let's come back to Ithaca and home and be natural once again under the apple tree. But also Positive Friction. How can we go back to that notion of community issues that are tough to solve, and bring in sections of the community and get back to our roots of figuring out solutions that don't leave people out, that make sure that the aging and the young and the rich and the poor, the per year family came up with ways that people with money and without could come into this festival. So how can we get back there? So I just want to recognize that. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
And come next year if you didn't hear it this year.
Kathy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's tough to follow something about grassroots, but I'll just say it's great to be back in Ithaca. I love this community. I want to apologize for my recent absences. I've been told by a few constituents that my having taken time to care for a family member could impact my future presence on the legislature. And be that as it may, I love my family. And it's also good to be back in Ithaca. I love this place. It's messy, and it's good. Just a couple things I want to say, because people have been asking me where I stand on the old library. I'm on the old library committee, and when I voted at committee to pass the old library decision onto the legislature, I said then that my intention is to allow discussion of this matter so the entire legislature could weigh in, as well as the public. that has happened and is happening, and it's messy and it's good. I want to just say that I was talking to someone recently who works for the state, and he was comparing our process to the process that he sees often at the state level. The example was a database that is going to be adopted by the state, something that's going to have an influence for, you know, probably the next 10 or 15 years or for as long as the state makes it be used, costing probably millions of dollars, having an impact with everyone in the state. And how that decision was made, he contrasted with how we go about making decisions here. It's messy, but it's good. And by that I mean that here we are, everybody's weighing in on every little aspect of it that they can and all the big aspects. And, you know, with some exceptions, people are, you know, conducting themselves with a lot of respect toward each other and not impugning other people's motives. But in the process, what we're coming up with is a clear understanding, not just the legislators, which is, I think, really important, those of us that feel like we get educated every day by our community and that that's our job, is to, you know, learn something, even if it changes our mind. But also a way of educating each other as to, you know, how do we prioritize? How do we prioritize? You know, we're trained sometimes to think of competing interests, but in the process of this messy, good process that we have here, sometimes we understand that interests aren't always competing, that there are ways that we can find that our interests are the same. We just have to come to results that, as Carol was kind of saying, have a positive impact on more people. What I'm getting at is he was saying, this person I was talking to, that several people in a room came up with a decision about this, and it was said to have gone out to RFP, but basically these people decided how this award, this contract was going to be awarded. Now, we can all get all excited and say that, you know, that's illegal and wrong and everything, and it probably could be, but my point is it's messy when we do it the right way. And it's good, but it is messy. And what I'm hoping that we'll get out of this is not a division in the community and people casting aspersions on someone that either voted this way or supported this or something like that, but just to understand that we're all doing the best we can to come up with a good solution rather than just high-handedly deciding we know what's best. And now for the record, I'll just say some details of interest that I think other people have weighed in on. I'm not going to tell you how I'm going to vote because I haven't figured it out yet, frankly. There's a lot to catch up on. You've heard me speak, and you kind of know where I stand on a lot of the basic issues. But I want to talk about the RFP because during these discussions, I said, and I believe, that it would be a poor precedent to include Lifelong directly in the RFP. It's not a county, department, or agency, and I still believe any decision I make should consider the community as a whole, what's the best project given the RFP, the county's comprehensive plan, the city's density policy, current economic and budget conditions, and what I've learned during the process from colleagues on the legislature, members of the public, staff. These are the guidelines that we pretty much always use. And yeah, it's tough. A lot of people say, I wouldn't want to be in your shoes and stuff like that. You know, that's what we signed up for. So to serve in public life, you have to have thick skin. Over the years, I've voted the issues. I've changed my stance because I've learned more. Sometimes I've kept to the same stance I started out with. Y'all remember that I voted to get this out of committee so the whole legislature could vote on this and discuss it and so that the public would have a chance to weigh in on this. Everybody's kind of, I don't know about y'all, but I spoke to somebody on the phone today about decision fatigue. That's a dangerous place to be, but I think that's close to where we're getting. I have a perspective, of course. I have affinity groups and constituencies. I'm a woman, a Chicana, a tradesperson. I'm openly a lesbian. I'm a Democrat, lifelong Democrat. I'm a working person, a union member. I'm an activist for all my whole life, for human rights, for LGBT rights, for the environment, as well as I'm an American, and I'm an avid outdoors woman, and I'm sure I left out about 20 of them. Who doesn't have a list like this? We all do. And how do you make decisions? You don't prioritize one over the other. What ends up happening is you have to make a decision based on the situation at the time. Because of these many affinity groups, I vote the issues despite pressure brought to bear. When I attended the Kennedy School of Government early in my legislative career, I asked a mentor there, how do you address these pressures? How do you address these different perspectives that a decision maker has to take into account? I told him, as a decision maker, supporters ask me, why won't you vote the way I want you to? Or why didn't you vote the way I want you to? Reminders of my previous votes of support do little to satisfy today. He said something that I've heard many times, maybe not word for word, but in essence, over the years. Yeah, but what have you done for me lately? And that's what it comes down to. And I'm saying this as a thought experiment, because what happens in public life is we're people that are thinking about the next election are always thinking, how do I show what I've done for you lately? Okay, let's make this list of accomplishments. Let's tell people how we're standing up for them in this way or that way. All this is a little bit like, in union terms, we got to a point and have gotten to a point where we are always we're always negotiating the contract instead of serving the constituency. And I believe that in public life, this always pandering to the show people what I've done for you lately gets in the way of us actually serving the public. That we're always trying so hard to show you what we've done for you lately and our recent accomplishments and making sure that we've got that resume updated and we can show you that something suffers. So in summary, what I'm going to say is, we're all going to have to live with whatever it comes up with. And I've got ideas like everybody else of trying to, you know, delay the decision to formally come up with a way to make the RFP a more open or a more honest document in terms of saying what we're going to come up with. Not that there's anything flawed about it. I actually liked the RFP process. I had a lot to say about it, and I think that it's done a good job of refining for us three really good proposals that couldn't be everything. None of them can be everything to us. And I think the public's done a great job of advocating. And believe me, you don't see all the advocating that goes on. There's a lot of phone calls, emails, personal stop, people stopping you on the street and stuff like that, saying, you know, what they think. So if it all came down to having to prove to each constituent what have I done for you lately in every vote, no one could ever vote the issues. They'd just be pandering to whatever caught their interest or the most interest at the moment. But I don't do that, and I won't do that. And it is apparently still, for now, my job to vote on this, and so I will. I just wanted to summarize, because I haven't had a chance to weigh in 16 times at every meeting. Like, God bless all my colleagues like you have. And so good luck to us all on this. I think that if we can just come up with a solid community afterwards, that'll be a really good thing, regardless of how it turns out.
Martha Robertson, then Nathan, then Leslie after that.
Thanks, Mike. I get to change the subject. In my sort of spare time, I'm working on a CFA, Consolidated Funding Application, for the Seneca Falls Women's Rights National Historical Park. And I wanted to, I know probably people in this community are working very hard. There's July 31st deadline to submit those. And I wanted to just give anybody a heads up, if you're applying on the behalf of a nonprofit, I learned something a week ago that kind of stopped me in my tracks, and you need to know this ahead of time. A nonprofit has to be pre-qualified by the state to even submit an application. So, and one of the first step in getting pre-qualified is printing out a couple of documents and getting one of them signed by your board president and notarized and snail mailed to Albany. Now, all of this is so, they're so proudly electronic about all this, but you have to put a hard copy of a piece of paper in an envelope. So if anybody is suddenly shocked by this news, please go right away to grantsreform.ny.gov. Now, that in itself tells you this is the way they see this, as they're reforming the grant-making process. But it's called grantsreform.ny.gov. There's all the information that you need. So that mailing something in hard copy is only the first step, and then there's lots more to follow. There is still time, but not much. And I will just say, in what's probably a sign of either a fantastic sense of humor by somebody in Albany or some vague sense of lack of self-awareness, this website is called Streamlining State Grant Processes.
Thank you, Martha. Nate?
I guess I'll talk about the old library now since other people have, yeah. Right? I want to start by saying that that this issue has been a difficult one for me, and anybody that's talked to me knows that I've been thinking about both projects. I voted for Franklin last time. After talking to members of Lifelong, I questioned that vote, and what's been happening is that I've been continuously trying to get new information to make the best decision that I can. And I know that irritates a lot of people, and people have acted very, 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 I would say, forcefully, emotionally, disrespectfully at times, because I'm doing that. But the thing is that even though I may be wavering in my support for either of these projects, the reason why is that I'm staying true to the idea that I want a project that's going to be good for downtown, that's going to bring housing and development to a place that is currently vacant, right? And I want a project that serves the community the best that it can. And so, however, whatever project I support today, and I will tell you which one I am right now, even if I support this particular project, my goal, though, is to still have a project rather than no project. So I'm putting that out there right now. Because the last thing I want to see is this site either be just an eyesore for the next decade, nor do I want to see it just out to auction where it's going to go to the highest bidder. And those are the alternatives if we do not make a decision. And so I believe a decision between these two projects, which, by the way, are both good projects. Neither is a bad project to me. It's just one I happen to support more than the other. So now I want to talk about the project that I'm going to be supporting today. And I plan on supporting the Franklin project today, which is how I, which is what I said I would support last time. And one of the reasons why I kind of wavered back and forth is because of the proposal that Franklin came forward with Lifelong. It was very much dependent on grant money through the New York State Regional Economic Development Council. And the information that I had been given at that time said, oh, no, Nate, that project is unlikely to pass the Regional Economic Development Council, and so you shouldn't take that seriously. And I went with that until I started trying to understand, wait, well, what are the requirements? What kind of projects do pass the Regional Economic Development Council? And so when you pull up the actual Regional Economic Development Council guidelines, there are guidelines for business investments, which this would actually count as because it does lead to jobs. And then from an economic growth investment standpoint, this is part of one of the top three categories, Part of it includes commercial revitalization activities in central business districts, right? So those are two ways. But then the project also has community support. It has a degree of readiness. It has public it has a private financing, and then if it gets the grant, some private. And then also, another performance measure for them is for downtown areas. And the degree to which this project supports smart growth, energy efficiency, et cetera. Now, where people got confused is that in the requirements it says, well, ineligible activities are residential development. But people didn't read the rest of the sentence, which says residential development, although program funds may be used for the commercial component of a mixed project. And that's the key thing. So I need to clarify that because I was misled and I was very annoyed by the fact that I was misled on that issue. And so there have been some projects that have met this criteria through the Regional Economic Development Council in the last cycle. And I'm going to just mention two of them. One in the Finger Lakes was the Sibley Tower redevelopment. And that was a renovation, the description on the website says, a comprehensive renovation strategy for the historic Sibley's department store in downtown Rochester. This project will create a low-income housing, market-rate housing, a new lifespan senior center, Class A office space, retail pushcarts, and an urban farmer's market. There's also another project in the North Country called Rail, and it's a mixed-use center of creativity with graduate and market-rate housing, office space, and nonprofit partners. And so clearly, even in the last cycle, there have been projects that have been supported that are very similar to what Franklin is supporting. And so contrary to what people have said, oh, no, this doesn't have a chance for a grant, well, I think it does. Now, what I would like to see from the developer, and we'll probably talk about this during the resolution standpoint, is, well, how can we get some assurances that if Franklin were to be the project that passed, that we would apply for this regional economic development grant, since the cycle has pretty much closed for this year. And so that's one thing that I'll be asking the developer about. But I am going to emphasize once again that both projects are good, though. I mean, I believe that the Travis Tide project is really important for the community, especially the fact that it provides 60 units of downtown housing and that it does have a very clear path for Lifelong. And so neither of these projects are bad. And if worse comes to worse, I plan on supporting the project that will prevail, because I do not want to see that eyesore in the community continue to be that way, nor do I want to be sold to the highest bidder.
Thank you. Leslin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to switch topics for a minute. I just want to say, with my WDIC hat on, happy Eid to our Muslim brothers and sisters in our community. And I'm particularly mentioning this because right now, which I'm not going to lie, is probably where I'd rather be, at Lowe's and Fish's, members of our Muslim community have been there providing a dinner in celebration of Eid, a dinner in celebration of Eid. For those of you who don't know, Eid marks the end of Ramadan, which is a month of fasting, a high time in the Muslim community. So I do want to give them a great big shout out, especially being over at Lowe's and Fish's and bringing a new dimension to dining and education and knowledge about folks who live in our community and their practices. So I just wanted to say that. I also wanted to say a big thank you to the members of this community who have reached into their pockets and into their hearts to donate and support a number of young people, black men and women, young people in our community, who will be traveling this weekend to Cleveland, Ohio, for the inaugural Black Lives Convening Conference from the 24th to the 26th of July. This is the first time it's happening. I learned about this conference, I think might have been last week or 2 weeks ago, at a meeting. Some young ladies brought it to our attention. One young lady in particular, Nicole Lafave, who works at the Multicultural Resource Center, she said, we need to raise about $12,000 because we want to take 20 young people, 20 to 40 young black
men and women from the Ithaca community to Cleveland, because this is important in our lives given so many things that have been happening. And I looked at them and thought, wow, you're trying to raise $12,000 in a week, good luck. In a week and a half, good luck. But they put the call out, and this community, recognizing how important it is for people to have an opportunity to gather and to talk about the issues and think about what sort of political and social actions they can take and put those things into motion, reached into their pockets and, as I said earlier, into their hearts, and donated to the point that they're able to take these individuals to Cleveland and also have a little something extra so that when they come back, they can share with this community what that experience was like, what the learning was like, and hopefully something will stick with all of us in the community, black, white, you know, brown, yellow, all of us as allies, that we can again try to change just the social dynamics that's been going all awry in our communities throughout this country. So again, I just want to say a great big thank you to those folks out there who is making this happen, and to the young people who are going to be traveling to Cleveland. I know it's a quick turnaround trip. You go on Friday and come back on Sunday, but the workshops are amazing, and I hope that the learning and just to be at a place where I imagine hundreds of thousands of black people will be convening to talk about issues that matter to them. I think it will be a very, very rewarding experience. I wish I could have gone myself, but I'll be well represented by many of the young people who are in program with me at GX. So again, thank you.
Can you give the website where people can go to donate to help people attend?
If you go to the Multicultural Resource Center website, that is the place where you can get more information. So again, thank you. I just wanted to share that, and thanks to the members of our Muslim community for sharing a big part of their culture. Sometimes it's so mysterious and people don't know what's happening, but just to be educated and know that there's no mystery behind it is amazing. So I want to say thanks.
Thank you. Peter Stein. I got Dooley Kiefer next.
I want to express my thanks to members of the public who have come here repeatedly, making useful points in many instances. One was tonight when someone read Elizabeth Reed's words on behalf of the DeWitt Park Neighborhood Association, pointing out something that has been worrying me also, that our RFP said one thing. We seem to be using criteria other than what we put out in the RFP to make a decision. And it's not clear to me whether a decision tonight is what we should be pushing for rather than deciding if we want to reframe what we're looking for to include lifelong, or whether we can make it clear that it doesn't have to include lifelong, but that we are committed to having good services for the senior population, and we'll do that outside of the choice of how to redevelop the old library site. So that's been on my mind a lot. Another thing that was pointed out to us by a member of the public, and which has always seemed like a sensible, simple statement, is that one of the three proposals can only be built on the old library site. That would be the Franklin proposal. The Travis Hyde proposal would be absolutely congruent with the West State Street rezoning that the city has done. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but it seems like a sensible thing, because having both projects would be better than having one. What I really wanted to comment on tonight under privilege of the floor was just how thrilled I am to see the Cuban embassy functioning again. It has been more than two generations, almost three generations of people who have children young that have lived under this ridiculous conflict, and I'm glad to see it's on its way to resolution.
I would just say one small thing, please, for my community, and that is the Dryden Lake Festival is also on Saturday. I think it starts at 10 a.m. So if you're out to Dryden, please come out and enjoy the festivities out there. Carol.
Yeah, I'm a little confused as to whether we're making our speeches now about while there's
well, I'm just going to let me. I want to take the pulse of the legislature right now. Let me ask what they would like to do. We can proceed through the agenda as we normally do. We do have people in the audience, obviously waiting to hear what we're going to do about the old library. What would this group like to do? Do you want to move the old library report up and then go to member file resolutions? A little unusual the way we're having to do this tonight, but I'm going to take my lead from this group. How would you like to go ahead?
That's the agenda.
Which is fine.
What you propose, moving it up?
Moving it up? Okay. Is that all right with everyone?
Yes.
Julie, you're not in favor of that?
I'm not. We have a very short agenda tonight, and it seems like those other pieces should not take us very long.
Show of hands. Who would like to move it up?
I have a question.
Oh, Martha?
We have some staff here. Is Jay here for something in particular?
The library.
What?
The library.
Okay. So that we often try to move things so that staff.
No.
Okay.
But,
yeah.
So how many people would like to move it up? Those who opposed to moving it up? One, two, three. I think we're going to move it up. All right, I'm going to go to a report from the old library committee, which is, I will give the report. After the lack of decision at the prior meeting on recommending a preferred developer not the last meeting, but the meeting before last, we decided to have a new old library committee meeting to, among other things, look at the seeker designation and to talk about it again. And we did have that meeting. We scheduled it within a few days. We were four people at the committee, two and two. And we discussed it. We made adjustments to the resolution having to do with seeker. And it was put forward. It was moved to move it back to this legislature with the recommendation for Travis Hyde. That lost 2-2. It was then moved to bring it forth with Franklin, and that also lost 2-2. So after the meeting, we did have a brief executive session because some of the members of the legislature wanted to hear again from Lifelong, and we did that with some of the representatives from Lifelong. And at the end of the old library meeting, I for one said, since we could not have a committee position, because there were not three votes, that I would put on the Travis Hyde resolution as a member filed resolution. Leslie McBean Claiborne said that she would put on the same resolution except designating Franklin Properties. And Dooley Kiefer said she would put on the resolution for Franklin Properties with additional language that she thought was necessary. So that's where we are tonight. We have three member filed resolutions because we did not have enough votes to get any particular resolution out of committee. Any questions I can answer on that? All right, then I'm going to move to item 13 on the agenda, which is the individual member filed resolutions, Resolution D. And since it's filed by me, I'm going to ask Mike Sigler. Mike, would you be kind enough to move that resolution?
Yes, Michael, I'll move resolution.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Dennis. We'll open it for discussion. Kathy Luz Herrera.
I noticed that this resolution has on line 21 and whereas that talks about it's potentially important to keep public control of the strategic site for possible future public use, which can be accomplished through a long-term lease rather than sale of the property. Now, I looked over into the resolved, and I don't see that it's in the resolved that it has to be leased. Would you explain to me, because I've told y'all before, for me that's a deal breaker. I just don't.
This is, if I can explain it, when we were debating the resolution of the previous meeting, Dooley Kiefer moved an amendment to add that whereas. And it was, on the second time through, adopted. And so it went back to committee with that in the resolution that had been debated. And so all three of the resolutions have it at this point. And it is not a requirement, but it is a discussion of asking that this matter be looked at. Dooley, you want to talk to it?
If you'd look at the second page of the resolution, line 28. It's in the resolved. I wouldn't support this or any of the resolutions that have that stipulation.
All that it says is attempt. It doesn't say will, shall.
I know. I'm just telling people that's my thing. That's what I'm doing.
Further discussion. Carol Chock.
On that point, the whereas there, I had a reaction to the word important. That whereas it is potentially important to keep public control of the strategic site, I would take kinder to potentially a consideration. It has been a consideration. I would consider that more accurate. And
are you moving an amendment?
Would I get a second? If I did, I'll move that.
Is there a second for that change in language?
It's potentially a consideration.
Not seeing a second, Carol.
Okay. And I will just take it that potentially does the job that I'm looking to do in any case.
Others? Mike Sigler.
If Kathy moved that as an amendment, I would accept that as friendly, actually. So
if I moved
that change in language.
I just taken out that whereas and that resolved?
I would do that, Kathy. It's the kind of guy I am.
On this one here?
Yeah. Well, I can't do it for the other ones.
Well, I'll probably do it on all of them.
Well, I realize.
Okay. Sure. On Resolution D, I'd like to make a motion to amend it to take out lines 21 and 22 on page 1, and on page 2, take out line 28.
I would consider that friendly. I don't know if my seconder will.
Can I ask that we have a vote on that issue? I think they really should have a vote.
It's okay with me. Even if it's friendly, it's fine to have a vote. It makes more sense, really.
Okay, if I move, is there a second to remove that?
There was.
Jim Dennis. Are you seconding Kathy's amendment?
He doesn't know.
Well, I had a question about it, so someone else needs to.
Is there a second to Kathy's amendment?
I'll second.
Mike, thank you. Discussion on the amendment.
And my question is that you're removing the long-term lease from this resolution. Okay.
Is that a question to Kathy?
No, I got the answer. And, you know.
Discussion on the amendment. Amendment is to remove the language that was added at the last meeting by Dooley Kiefer. Dooley?
Since the RFP included you would be interested in leasing or selling, that's still going to be there. And this just made it clearer that there's a reason that it might be desirable to lease it instead of sell it, which is that this is a very important location within the city, and it would be potentially important to have public control of how that land is used 99 years from now, if we're still alive. as a species, as a world.
I hope not.
I plan to be. I don't know about the rest of you. Jim Dennis?
Dooley, I have the exact opposite feeling. I think the land should be sold.
You want to sell it outright, period, you said.
Absolutely. It's part of the project, whichever one. And,
Other comments on the amendment?
Just to say that moving this isn't—it's not my intention to sell this outright. I just—I was leery, just as I was leery of putting Lifelong into the RFP, of putting the possibility of a long-term lease in it. I just figure the more strings you put on it, the harder it makes it to come up with a project that will work for the whole community. And for me, it's a deal breaker. I just want it out of there, and that's why I moved this.
Carol Chalk.
I'm trying to grapple with the notion of how important this is, whether it's in or not in, since it's already in our RFP and our intention to still be talking to either developer about the potential for land lease. Whether it's in or not in this resolution doesn't really change that.
It just tends to give it more importance.
A vote. So, I think it gives the developers more flexibility if it's not in there and they can decide. So I think I'll support it, but I don't think it's that crucial. I don't think it's a deal breaker the way it's worded, whether it's in or out.
Mike Sigler?
I don't know. I'm feeling very smart about math. You kind of need her. So this is a red line, and it's not a red line for me. If we sell it, great. If we don't sell it, if we do a lease, I'm okay with that too. But clearly, we should be sending her to Iran to negotiate this because it's a red line.
Thanks.
Well, are we ready to vote on the amendment?
That's what I'm thinking. So let's vote on the amendment.
All those in favor of the amendment, which would remove the language about the ground lease that was added last time, all those in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand.
Aye.
One, two, three, four. Those opposed to the amendment. One, two, three, four, five, six.
I haven't voted yet.
Who's not voting?
I haven't voted yet because I'm still trying to figure this out. Sorry.
All right, we'll ask for a roll call. Let's get it down. On the amendment.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
No.
Ms. Chalk?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Mr. Klein?
No.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
No.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Ms. Rupp?
Excuse
me. Mr. Shinagawa?
No.
Mr. Lane?
I'm a no. Please show Martha Robertson on these votes as abstaining. She announced she would be doing that.
Five ayes, seven noes, one abstention.
So the amendment stays in the resolution. Let's continue a debate on the resolution itself. Anyone else want to speak to it, or you want to go to a vote? Nathan.
I just wanted to say I've got some a couple people have asked me about, with Martha abstaining, whether or not I should abstain because I was the chair of her campaign for a period of time. And I've looked at the rules, and I don't think it would apply to me, but I can see the potential for people thinking that there's conflicts here. But I was the chair of the campaign during the first year of Martha's campaign for Congress, and I did not solicit donations from these groups or from anybody that's associated with this project while I was chair. And so I just wanted to disclose that.
How many years?
Is this the right thing to do?
So you're not asking to abstain?
I'm not asking to abstain. No,
right.
Just letting people know.
Carol Chalk?
Are we done with that topic?
Okay. Well, unless anybody wants
on the main resolution.
Okay. So I want to take the opportunity to review why I support the Franklin property and would vote against this one. I'll preface it by saying that I got a call just as I was leaving, which is why I missed a one-minute meeting, it must have been. I got here 1 minute late for the pre-meeting HSS. Sorry. I got a call from an 89-year-old resident of my district who couldn't be here tonight, who said that they are, yet another constituent of mine who was very concerned about the lack of downsizing opportunities for somebody who wants to still own a property in Ithaca, and had seen this, the figures we talked about not one new for sale property coming on the open market in the city of Ithaca in the last 5 years. There have been 27, I think it was at last count, according to our director of assessment, who sees those and can call up those records, of which something like 14 were INHS properties that that went to qualified, income qualified buyers, and the rest were all sold to buyers who had to know the developer, know the builder, because they go so fast. There are so few of them. At the same time that hundreds of units of rental housing have gone on the market. And so I just want to review that that just honed for me, and with somebody who just couldn't physically get here tonight to say so herself. I believe it is part of the role of government to help fill in the gaps. Where the market is providing, we don't have to step in as closely, and that in our case we have a lack of balance in the availability in our community, particularly in the city, of owner-occupied units related to rental units, and the difference just keeps getting wider and wider, and that leads to all kinds of repercussions in the number of people we have available to be on boards, the number of people who get invested in the community, those who are available as volunteers. You name it, and it reverberates in impact. The arguments people have given about a sense of place, I think that's important. My own roots on the tourism board, where that's what brought a lot of us to live here. That's what brought us a lot of us to visit here, decide to stay, and helps companies that move here and provide jobs decide that this is a good place, that there is a sense of place. It isn't just any town, USA. The third is energy. I don't believe that all energy solutions are equal. Even where they are equally efficient, I think those that help stem more climate change problems are more equal than those, even if you look at equal units, it's supposedly, of carbon dioxide equivalents on the two-decade time frame, the methane does much more harm. So energy is important to me. I support strongly us looking at how to serve the aging demographic. I have joined that demographic. I'm officially a senior. I really relate to what we heard from Lisa Holmes about, I don't want to be called a senior. I need another term for it. Give me another term for it. You were good, so good with words.
Elderly.
I need something. Elderly. No, I don't want that one either, but I'm still active. I really hate to see the a struggling organization that's serving a demographic that's growing be put in a position, really, of now being possibly alienating the part of the community that is walkable to receive their services. So I really want us to do something else, and I don't think this is the right venue to do it. And I have heard from Mary Pat, and I think Brian ran out of time before. I heard you start to say that you're taking your own look at what are other options, regardless of what happens here, and I'd like to see you have the opportunity to do that. So maybe tonight's not the time for us even to be making this decision. But I think that's important, and it's really touched a nerve that I support. So I'd like an opportunity to hear more about that. I'd like to also weigh in on what we should be doing if we're still deadlocked. I agree with those who are saying that the worst possible outcome would be for us to throw up our hands and just send it onto the market to the highest bidder. That's ridiculous. It's too crucial a site in the city of Ithaca and in our community to do that. And, I mean, boy, if you look at just these two projects that we're debating, the difference in taxes to our tax roll between the two, the one that gives us more would give us also the ability to do something for lifelong if we chose to allocate the funds that way. So the Franklin property brings us more in assessment. And so we could choose. There's lots of things we could do, and there's lots of things that lifelong could do. So I'd hate to see us just throw up our hands. And so if we can't come to an agreement, I think that the options I see would be to give the lifelong a little bit more time, and I'd want to hear more about how much time they'd need to be looking at what their options are so that our decision doesn't carry that weight with it, or at least we know more about whether it does and to what extent, that we have a chance to hear more from them about strategic plan to get out of the straits they're in, maybe with some equity intact. We could be postponing with the current proposals and see what develops in the next few weeks or 2 months. I wouldn't want to go more than 6 months, certainly, but 1 to 6 months, I'd listen to reason about what made sense. Postpone, and that's without a chance to tweak. Postpone with a chance to tweak. So maybe in a certain number of months, we really do hear the final from people about where they stand. The third would be to work with the city, as somebody suggested, as to whether we could work out something with them where the decision would be made after it goes through the process or they take it over. Or a fourth would be to come back in a few years and, you know, let these developers, you know, off the hook. I don't think we lose them if it's a matter of a few months. Those who said there's no skin in the game, any developer who's gotten to this stage with us has a lot of skin in the game. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars, and we recognize that for both of you, and thank you for bearing with us. I know that you know it's always part of the process to deal with the public and come to many meetings. On this one, you've got the county, and you still have to go through the municipalities process. So, you know, those are my thoughts. I'm done, and I do support Franklin. I will vote against this one, and we'll vote against for the ones when they come up on Franklin. Didn't want to have to take up time more than once.
Okay. I've got Jim Dennis, then Mike Sigler, then myself.
I was confused there for a while. I thought we were talking about the Franklin Project, but we're actually talking about the Travis Hyde Project. Carol, I need for you to listen very closely. When I said there was neither developer had any skin in the game, I was talking about lifelong. Of course, I recognize that they have money in this to get it to where they are. I've had a bit more experience than anyone else around the table and voting on these things and being involved in it. So please, I understand.
Mike?
I'll be quick. I just don't see how we get to 8 votes on either on any of these. I mean, I can count. I do agree with Nathan on a lot of what he said. I am not willing to let that building sit there another 10 years. And if we think, oh, it'll just be a year. No, it won't be just a year. We don't do anything in a year. So, and I think it would be a shame if we lost these two developers because we wanted to wait longer. Because they can't wait forever. I don't see how these pass tonight. I would like to take votes because I didn't really know where people stood. Be honest, I didn't know where Nathan stood. I didn't know where Kathy stood. So when these fail, I would suggest that we go back to committee, not just to go back to committee. I would say that we would have Joe and our county attorney pull together maybe 3 options of what can be happened. One of the options is put it out in the open market. I'm sorry, that is an option. If that's not an option for you, we're going to have a more open mind on these two proposals. If everybody is locked into this one proposal, then we're going to have a problem. I am not as locked in as other people are. I mean, I want to see something happen here, much like Nathan. So, but I would like to see, I mean, I definitely have a preference. I think one is going to work out much better for the city than the other. But I would like to know, if neither of these passes, I would suggest that we go to Joe and the county attorney and we say, what can we do here? What are the options here? I mean, do we put these back out for bid? What are our options? I can't imagine we are going to do a whole other RFP. I mean, we have 2 good developers. They've invested money in this. I do not want this sent out to the free world again because that is not fair to either one of these. So that's where we're at. At least that's where I'm at.
I had myself down next. A couple of points I wanted to make. One, I do want to speak that I've been so pleased with the professionalism of both of the developers who've come forward. I haven't seen anything here, even though this has been a battle. The battle and some of the things that have been not so nice have been on some of the proponents of one thing or the other. Little wonder that Brian Wilbur seemed a little bewildered tonight. I don't blame him. For some reason, it seems that people have tried to, in some way, denigrate or vilify Lifelong, which is trying to do the best for its people. And to say that, well, we know better how Lifelong ought to run itself than Lifelong knows itself. And we can do better if they would just listen to us. Or we know that they don't really want to go with this project or that project. And that's what I'm hearing out there. Carol, yes, I'm hearing that. And I haven't been happy with that. Nathan, you mentioned some of the things that could happen here. One of them is to put this on the market. I don't like that option. Another option I just want to put out there, and I'll talk about one that's been out there since 1999, and that's to take the building down and hang on to the lot until we find the proper use for it. For a long time, we thought it was going to be the location for a center of government building until the economy tanked and we really couldn't do that. There's still reasons for thinking about a center of government building. And maybe 10 years from now, that might be an option on the table for some future legislature. I don't know. I've hesitated to raise that other than informally in the past, but I just want to put that on the table, that's another possibility. There are things that we could do here. Having said that, I've supported this process to move along And I hope that we can come to a conclusion one way or the other. But at some point, we're going to have to take some votes here tonight and just to see. Or as Mike Ziegler has just said, you know, send it back to committee, and we'll have to take some time and look at options. Nathan?
That was my question. Just what do we do if that's not the best?
Will?
Thank you, Mike. This has been a very interesting process, and I have learned from all of you. I've really tried to hear what your concerns are and try to understand why we have come out on different sides of this. Two meetings ago, Nathan gave us a wonderful discourse on the role of the legislators and the differing roles, and, you know, why don't we just vote with the crowd? Well, I mean, that's tempting, and I have... I certainly understand why that feels good. I also know it can be very frightening to stand up to a crowd, and sometimes you have to do what you truly feel is right. And I respect all of you for dealing with that struggle. And I hope our community will understand that this is not an easy thing for any of us. Both projects, as people have said over and over again, have enormous strengths, and we are blessed. In some ways, just as we're cursed, we're also blessed for being in this decision point. Mike, I agree with you that maybe going to sending it over to Joe, who we have enormous wisdom with, and Jonathan can come up with some ideas. I think that's good. Brian, I really appreciated the way you phrased the situation. I think had I been on your board, I might have made a very similar decision. You have to look at the organization, the needs of that organization. We on this body need to look at the larger community, and that is, you know, it'd be nice if they completely meshed, but you know, in part they don't. Relative to that, because a number of you have expressed lifelong as a key concern, and because from what I gather, their problems are not just the lack of an efficient building, but a variety of other. I would be very supportive of some effort to sit down, perhaps with a committee or whatever, to try to better understand what Lifelong's needs are, where they feel the organization is going, and how we as a county might lend support. Because I think regardless of how this comes, I think it's a very, very important organization, and I want it to survive and thrive. I have been trying to think in terms of the I've voted for the Franklin Project several times. I completely agree with Nate that I think the last thing I want to do is just put it on the open market. I think we have struggled to try to come up with something that really addresses a lot of good outcomes besides raising money. And that would be lost, I think, if we just put it up to for bid. But I've been trying to say, like, what are the negatives from the Travis High project that I feel, and the ones that I've been hearing from the community. One is the overall size, the massing. It just seems very big and aesthetically incompatible with what surrounds there. Now, one could make the same argument about the library. I'm sure when that was built, that was very, very jarring to our community. It was just plopped down there. But it's a funny thing. As things get older, people get used to it and more tolerant. And now it's part of our community aesthetic. The Franklin Project has the virtue that it essentially lives on that footprint, not using much of the building. It's the skeleton, the footings, maybe the elevator shafts, but the footprint and the mature trees and from what I can glean from the drawings, it will be. Oh, and also because it is a smaller building, it will be less imposing. The second concern I've heard, and this is, I'd love if somebody has a better answer to this, is I think it's the Travis High project is severely inadequate in terms of parking. And, 60-some residents, I believe, The number of parking spaces was 52 parking spaces, but that's to accommodate not only the residents but the needs of the organization. I don't know if anybody in Lifelong has seriously figured out how program would happen to work there, but it seems like there'll be many, many fewer parking spaces than you currently have at your facility. And how that works, I don't know. Before this meeting, I pulled Graham aside. I said, okay, well, could this project possibly be changed in terms of parking? And he said, well, I guess early on they considered many different possibilities. Said, well, you know, how would you do this? And you could conceivably put parking underneath if you wanted to add $1 million to the cost of the project. They had come up with the best scheme that made sense to them, but to me that is a serious negative. Anyway, I think it's clear we're not going to arrive at 8 votes for any decision, but I hope we move forward and really, really try to listen to each other and see if we can't get some areas of agreement. Thank you.
Ready to vote? Dooley?
Yeah.
Then Jim?
I would like to move a small amendment to your resolution. I would move it to Leslin's, too, for that matter, if that gets on the floor, which is on the second page of the resolution, after lines 14 and 15, which says what the old library committee did on June 9th. It's in my draft resolution, lines 17 and 18. I'll just read that. Whereas on July 10th, 2015, the committee agreed to change the seeker type, as Mike mentioned, and to expand the last resolved to indicate future steps yet to be taken, but failed to endorse either developer. So that's a summary of the old library committee's next action, as you reported it this evening. So I move to amend your resolution to add that.
There's a motion. Jonathan.
Would you mind changing the word type to designation, because it doesn't change the type. It's still a type 2.
Of course. Thank you, Jonathan.
Does anyone have an objection to that? Maybe it's friendly. I don't know.
Can you
want to restate, Dooley, what you wanted to say?
Whereas on July 10th, 2015, the committee agreed to change the seeker designation and to expand the last resolve to indicate future steps yet to be taken, but failed to endorse either developer. Am I supposed to ask, is that friendly?
I just wondered if it was friendly, or do you want someone to second that? Second. All right, let's call for a second for that amendment. Is there a second?
Isn't it already said?
Not seeing a second, Dooley.
I'm not understanding. Isn't that what it already says?
It is. No.
Can you read it? What's the word that's changing?
I'm adding a whereas to bring it up to date.
Right. I'm sorry. Can I ask it to be read again?
Dooley, would you please read it again?
Yes. This follows the one that says on June 9th. It would say on July 10th, 2015, the committee agreed to change the seeker designation and to expand the last resolve to indicate future steps yet to be taken, but failed to endorse either developer.
So Dooley's moved that. We hadn't had a second yet. Carol's seconded it. Ready to vote, or do you want to talk about it? All those in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's a yes, 7. Oh, I don't see 8 votes, so that fails. Who else wants to speak? Jim Dennis.
I want to make a couple of statements. It's come to my attention that there's no on-site parking requirement in the new zoning for either building. So that question's kind of out there. And Mr. Sutherland, we are talking about Travis Hyde resolution, but we seem to be talking about your project, and or some are. I have a couple of questions. How tall is your building going to be? How many stories?
Mr. Sutherland,
how many
might
stories?
You come to the microphone if you want to respond? Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, the one is four stories. Are you going to be four also?
Yes. Mr. Demarest. I'll answer that. Noah Demarest with Stream. The building is three stories above a lower level parking lot, and then it's just underneath the 50 feet of the maximum zoning allowed, that it allows.
And my other question is, are you going to demo the outside, the exterior of the building?
What we're
going to
do is peel off the brick and the windows and get back to a point where you see the concrete floor going all around,
right.
But there's just no, it's open at that point. And then we will put a new skin on that's energy efficient and with window patterns that work with the residential.
So it's safe to say you're going to you're going to demo the outside of the building.
Well, we're peeling off the front, yeah. But it's called selective demolition.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Are we ready to vote?
I have a process question.
Sure.
So, is there anything in our process that says if we fail to pick any of these now, that it can't come back later? Do we then get to figure out what to do next?
If we don't pass any of these resolutions tonight, as chair of the committee, I will take it back to committee, and we will have a thorough discussion about how to proceed.
Okay, and would we have the option tonight to talk about how to proceed as sort of a committee of the whole?
Sure. I don't have a problem with that. Jim?
I want to call the question now.
Question's been called. Is there a second for calling the question? Mike Sigler. All those in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have two opposed to calling the question, so the question is called. We will proceed to a vote on Resolution D, and I think it's as presented. I don't think any of the amendments were adopted. We'll ask for a roll call, please.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
No.
No?
No.
Yes. This is on the Travis Hyde proposal.
Coaching.
Please start the roll call again.
Rewind.
Please start the roll call again.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
No.
Ms. Chalk?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
No.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Mr. Klein?
No.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
No.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
No.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
5 ayes, 7 noes, 1 abstention.
All right, we'll move on. That resolution fails. We'll move to the next resolution.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can I ask a question? So what happens if, and I know I'm new to this, y'all have endured this a few times, if none of the proposals gets 8 votes tonight, what happens, and I know you just asked this, but I just want to be clear, we have to have 8 votes to get...
We can't take action without 8 votes.
Okay. Can I just take this minute to say, I told you so. We need an odd number of legislators, and while I'm getting this in, I don't care if this is the time for it or not, city representatives need more representation on the legislature. I know that I'm somebody that's been guilty of being absent, but apparently I'm not the only one that can be absent from time to time. And it's 10 years till we get a chance to amend our, what was it called? It was an independent redistricting commission. And some of us very dearly wanted to keep five representatives from the city on it, and some of us really wanted to keep an odd number. And I think those two things are playing largely into this conundrum we find ourselves in tonight. Thank you for letting me vent.
All right, Mike Sigler.
A couple things. I mean, without Martha, we have an odd number. So.
Yeah, but you still need eight.
Yeah, but we
right.
Still down.
And we still have five representatives from the city. So.
No.
Four.
No,
four.
Just
I'm looking at
no,
you.
No, we don't.
We weren't looking.
All right.
What? Am I miscounting? I
mean, you are miscounting.
I'm counting five, right?
Will is from the town.
I know. Like two people.
All right, folks. Right? Let me see where I want to point out that it is 7:35. We're beyond break time, but do you want to continue?
No,
at this
I
point?
Was going to ask if we could have a recess first.
Do we want to take a 10-minute break at this point?
Let's
get through these two
let's
resolutions.
Get their votes.
I've seen people shaking their heads no. Those who want to take a break, stick your hand up. Those opposed? Okay, we'll just continue then. Let's go to Resolution E. And this is the one that was...
I'll move Resolution E.
All right, Dooley Kiefer has moved Resolution E. This designates the Franklin Group and has some additional language.
You got that break? I would have added more.
Is there a second for Dooley's resolution? Seconded by Nathan. Discussion. Nathan?
Can I ask Mr. Sutherland to come up to the microphone? Yes, thank you. So, a big piece of this is lifelong for me, and I am allowed to say that because the RFP does, as Mr. Gillespie said, state that we can consider community organizations. So I just want to say that. And so, as part of that, though, when you had a meeting with Lifelong, it was in the hope that you can get some sort of agreement to be able to apply for the RADC grants. Mm-hmm. I understand that time frame may have passed,
it's still out.
It's
there,
still on, but not
but
unlikely
there
to be done.
There wouldn't be enough time to
right,
pull
to do
all
it
the pieces
well.
Together.
Yes, and so so given that, how would your project be able to apply for that if we were to? I mean, how do we both support the project tonight mm-hmm. and also make sure that that happens, that grant application happens?
Well, if we were selected, if you wanted us to do this, we would just simply postpone our project long enough that we could apply next year at this time, and the actual announcements occur in December each year, so. By December of 2016, we would know one way or the other. There's a provision in the REDC grant process that you can't start a project until the announcement's made. In the original RFP response that we provided, we set a start date of spring of 2016. If we were waiting until December, we'd have about a nine-month delay, which is, that's not that much in the overall world of things. And so you just simply wait until all that happened and you'd start a little bit later. The first part of our project, again, would be peeling away the outside of the building. And you could do that winter as well as summer. And, you'd start doing things that you could do right away. And you would begin to enclose the building late winter. You'd work through the warmer months, and we'd probably still be bringing the building online somewhere between January and March or April of 2017.
So how would we, and this is a question for the county attorney or the county administrator, how could I propose an amendment to the resolution to ask that we make this happen, that we extend, that we wait this nine-month period so that they can apply for a grant to accommodate, to hopefully support Lifelong. How would that work?
So you would want to pass this contingent upon their receipt of the grant? Is that what you're saying?
That's
so you would approve it now.
Right.
but then make it contingent upon the receipt of the grant money 9 months or a year from now.
Or not even receipt of the grant money, because I understand that that's, you know, we can't determine what the REDC does, but at least the submission of a grant, you know, that, I mean, hopefully that we would have some input on.
Well, I don't know if you could build a contingency into the resolution like that.
I'm not really sure what you're asking, because, I mean, if and when it's awarded to one company, yeah, there are a bunch of things that they're going to have to do.
Right.
And that would be right. One just like any number of others.
Yeah.
And if that's what you mean.
What I'm saying, John, is that this project, right, because we've taken longer than we wanted to on this decision, the developer has not had the opportunity to work on this grant, right? So they are, the developer is willing to wait a 9-month period or so to be able to apply the next time period where the grant's eligible. And that's, and I think that's something that my vote would be contingent upon.
If I may, I don't think we can actually decide that, because there is no, to my understanding, there's no memorandum of understanding for that process between Lifelong and the Franklin Group at this point. So at the very most we could do, I would think, would be to set this matter aside, go back to committee, and see if they wanted to talk more. But we can't assume that Lifelong wants to proceed with a grant application or in conjunction with or by itself with the Franklin Group. Who had their hand up first? I'll start with Carol, then go to Peter and Dooley.
Nate, would it satisfy you to put in and whereas Franklin Properties has pledged to
Yeah, I don't know, because I don't really like that. I don't like pledges.
Pledged. Okay, well, pledged is the wrong word, but
no,
indicated a willingness to apply.
Yeah, the willingness is not good enough. I mean, I want to know that it's
intention, as expressed an intention to apply.
Well, that's all the same thing.
Same thing. Okay, and maybe I could. Okay.
I guess I had Peter and then Dooley and then Jim.
Yeah, I'm having the feeling this conversation is getting too complicated for me to understand. Applying for a grant is not the same thing as getting a grant. If indeed we're committed to finding some solution for Lifelong, applying for that grant, maybe it'll work, but maybe it won't. Am I making a mistake or what?
No, you're not.
Yeah, you're not making a mistake, but we shouldn't assume that that's the only things that's. I mean,
Dooley?
Both of these projects only somewhat help Lifelong, right?
Well, I understand,
no.
But if we in fact,
sorry, go ahead.
I thought Peter was done.
If we in fact pledge that we will choose this company, as long as they apply for the grant, that does not mean that they'll end up with a way of making it possible Lifelong to live. Or maybe I've made a mistake.
You're right.
Right. Yeah.
You're right. Okay, thank you.
I've got Dooley and then Jim.
It's my understanding that when there is a selected or preferred developer, the county negotiates with that developer. There are a number of steps to go through, and whoever is doing the negotiation on our behalf will understand a directive to them from this legislature to do what you're talking about, if that's what you want to try to have happen. I think there's a mechanism for that to be done under that rubric.
If there was a mechanism, I would be in favor of that mechanism.
So put it in the resolution.
I don't think... That,
I don't know how to...
We just have to direct our negotiators, who are probably our county administrator and attorney, but I don't know.
Don't we direct them by putting it in a resolution?
But what are you going to say specifically?
Just like we did on the
Wait,
other
so
one.
So this is
this
doesn't
mean,
have to be part
time,
of this
please.
Resolution.
Just like line 28 in the other one, that in negotiations the county will attempt to secure a ground lease, resolve further that in negotiations or that in contract phase the county will insist on a...
All right. After Dooley, I have Jim.
John, can you help out here? Let me just say what I'm feeling. We have one developer who has the potential for doing something with Lifelong, Travis Hyde. We have another developer who doesn't have a memorandum of understanding, has to wait and hope that he gets a grant a year from now. And, I mean, it's almost outrageous that you would give the high sign to a developer who doesn't have all the things in a row. I mean, it's amazing that you would do that.
Nathan?
No, but that's only the case if that's the only criteria that you're using for deciding this project. But there's multiple criteria.
Mike Siglin and Carol?
I'll just do really quick. Part of the reason we didn't include, I don't know if this gets lost, part of the reason we didn't include at the committee level Lifelong in it was we didn't want Lifelong being the deciding factor.
Yes.
I mean, that was why we left it out. Some people are like, well, why wasn't it part of the RFP? It wasn't, but it was. I mean, it was an understood, I mean, it was in the paperwork. It wasn't like it was, you know, out there in the ether. It was definitely written down, but it wasn't going to be the only, you know, we didn't want them being the sole decider. It's the county property. I mean, the county makes the decision. You know, we can't do that with other not-for-profits where there's not, we couldn't go to GIAC and say, well, GIAC's going to make the decision for the county.
Of course. Oh, we will. Not a doubt.
So I just wanted to point that out because that seems to get lost a lot.
Good point.
I guess what I could say in response to the question is, you know, what your resolution really is selecting a preferred proposer.
Right.
And then we are negotiating with the proposer, which would involve many things, including satisfying seeker as well as historic development, as well as other things which will undoubtedly come up during the process. If one of those things is to work with neighbors, whether they be Lifelong or any other neighbor, to try to satisfy certain things, we can certainly work at that. I think trying to identify all those things in advance in a resolution is just not really feasible or possible. In this case, particularly, we don't really know how, you know, even where Lifelong will be in terms of wanting that grant in a year, et cetera. So, I mean, I think you could direct the staff to do, you know, after selecting a preferred proposer, could do any number of directions to the staff, which we will try to do whatever the are directed by the legislature.
Okay,
I guess that's as best as I can answer.
We got Carol, then I'd like to get to a vote.
Well, I'm... At some point, I was going to do it later, but maybe it would be useful. I wanted to ask if we could have Mary Pat or Brian talk to us a little bit about some of the things that you're continuing to look at about making either your programs and or your real estate work for you, and at what point you might be willing and ready to talk to us as either as a committee of the whole or a committee of people who want to show up for it about what your organization will need and, again, programmatically and structurally and
Carol,
real estate-wise.
It seems to me that would really be...
If we have a sense of time frame for that...
But if these don't go ahead, you know, and we go back to committee, that might be a reason to request another executive session with Lifelong, for example.
Well, it might be, and I guess one of my additional questions to them is, would you want to be doing that in an executive session versus just an open session like we do with the library and TC3 and some of the other organizations that we deal with and get reports from, you know, that are more open? either way, I'm having trouble understanding a time frame under which you think you're going to know, because that would make a difference to me whether we just postpone this for a few weeks, if that's all it is, versus a few months versus longer, and then on other, so that's time frame wise. And in terms of time frame, I'll also point out that even delaying by a year or 9 months for the Franklin property still gets us a building at the same schedule as the other building, just because it's so much shorter to build one of them. But can we ask for an answer from Mary Pat?
Well, your question has a supposition, a time frame. You've got a supposition about something, that you're assuming that there's something going on there that you need an answer for. I'm glad to ask them to, if they'd like to respond in some way.
It's not a supposition that they've told us that that there's financial considerations, and so we've asked, can we hear more about the financial considerations, and then
I got all kinds of hands.
I'm asking folks for a time frame if they can, when we would know more. Are we looking at weeks or months or a year? Is any of that in order to ask for an answer to?
I don't know if they want to respond to that or not. That's up to them.
Yeah.
But while they're thinking about that, let's go to Peter.
I had my hand up.
Yeah, you're next. Yeah. You think you had it up before Peter had his up?
Yeah,
I just wanted to say I think it's completely inappropriate to ask the person to come to make that kind of a discussion without any preparation for it. I don't think that's an appropriate way to deal with that.
Well, why don't we ask them? If they're not ready to answer, they don't have to.
Well, you're putting them in a difficult position, and I think it's inappropriate.
Nathan's next.
No, I mean, my support for Franklin is very much wrapped up with the idea that we somehow find language to ensure that this grant application happens. And so if we can't find that out tonight, if people want my vote for the Franklin Project, I advise that we either, you know, table this discussion, move it to next week, or we vote no, and then when we talk about it at the committee level, that this is one of the topics of discussion.
Kathy?
Thanks. I agree with Nathan and would just like to go a little further and be a little stronger and say that I think it's rude to characterize an organization that is a private not-for-profit as not being as transparent as some of our county, basically their county departments that depend on us for funding. And I think the implication there was completely out of order and inappropriate. And I also think challenging a member of the audience to come forward and speak is not in our purview. And I think the chair made it pretty clear where he stands. And I'd like for that insistence to stop. I wish we had a sergeant-at-arms or something.
I'm sorry. We just asked a developer to come forward and
anyone
speak,
else want
and we
to
got
speak?
An answer. And I did ask them ahead of time if they'd be willing to do it, and the answer is I believe
I'll be quick.
Yes.
What I wanted to say was I think we should take votes on these so we know where people maybe you guys reach out, and then we kind of charge the county attorney and Joe, what are our options going forward here? One is obviously you put it on the open market. The other, is it possible that we open the bidding on the actual property to the two developers so that we get the most money possible? I don't know. I would like to know what some of the people's red lines are in this room. I don't have any red lines. I like both proposals. So whichever gets to eight, I'll be good with.
Can we vote on Dooley's resolution?
Sure, that would be great. Mike.
Which is... Resolution E. Ready to vote on this? All right. This would designate the Franklin Group as the preferred developer. Roll call vote, please.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
No.
Ms. Kiefer? Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Shinagawa?
No, and can the minutes reflect my reasons that I stated previously?
Mr. Lane?
No. Anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
5 ayes, 7 noes, 1 abstention.
All right, that fails as well. We'll move on to the resolution that has been filed by Legislator McBean-Claiborne, which also designates the Franklin group, just does not have the extra language that the previous resolution had. Lesson, do you still want to move forward with that?
Yes, I do.
All right.
So I'd like to move Resolution F, designating preferred developer Tompkins County Olds Library property. It is, as you explained, what is different in this resolution for me. I want to make sure we point out lines. Oh, boy. And Dooley's here. I think it's lines 27 and 28. And Dooley speaks to, whereas it is in the interest of the county to be assured that a project that emerges from the city approval process is reasonable, congruent with what the legislature approves, that it does not exist in the resolution I am proposing.
All right. We've been moved and seconded. Can we proceed to – I'm sorry? I'm sorry. Was there a second to that? Someone else seconded? Will Burbank. Can we move to a vote, folks? All right, let's have a roll call on this. Remember, this is designating Franklin again. It's basically the same as the last vote, except with did not have the extra language that Dooley had proposed in hers.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
No.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes. Go ahead.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Shinagawa?
No.
Mr. Lane?
No. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
4 ayes, 8 noes, 1 abstention.
So the all three resolutions have failed. We have failed again to designate a preferred developer. I promised Carol that we could talk about what you'd like the committee to do when it goes back to committee. Carol?
That's not what I raised my hand about now. I just would really like the opportunity to clarify for my peers, and if there was any misunderstanding among the lifelong folks, I hope from my conversations with you over the past few weeks that you know that my intent is to make sure that we have information so that we could do what some of my colleagues have talked about doing, is figure out ways that we can support you. And it was in no way meant to denigrate, and my intent was to offer you the opportunity, if your 3 minutes had been too short, to come back up. And I would still offer you that opportunity. Should you be crying for it, I would offer it to you, as our process allows us to do.
Peter?
Isn't it time for a break now or not?
I just thought
I'm not sure.
If we could talk about what we would go back to committee with. If there anything that you want to tell committee, we're all the members are here, so you can tell us. Mike?
I would like to hear from Jonathan and Joe. Maybe 5 different things we can do. Like, 1, obviously, put it on the open market. 2, can we open this up for bidding just between the 2 developers? 3,
you'd like options.
Lifelong be separated out into a whole separate issue.
All right.
And a plan come up with them or for them. Should the land be sold? This is something somebody brought up. I don't know if I'm at liberty to say who. The land be sold maybe to the city. The city buys it from us. No, it's the city's issue, not our issue. I mean, these are the kind of concrete suggestions I would like for our committee to consider.
All right.
We give them the break to figure out their answer.
Arthur, you want to come up?
Why don't we take a break while they figure out their answer?
No, I think they're not going to do that now. They're going to do that.
I've got Leslie, and then Martha had her hand.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure that our planning director is also involved in whatever that conversation is. And I know Joe will do that. Thank you.
Martha?
This is a process question, so I assume I'm legal to ask. If you can ask
who knows? Does anybody know that they will not be in attendance at the next legislature meeting?
That's
anybody
a good question.
In this room?
If the committee decides to bring a resolution back, will we have a full complement next time? Anyone here who knows that they won't be here? Kathy, you've been told.
I will be here. Oh, I thought you asked.
Next time. All right, I'm not seeing anyone. So, Kathy Covert says she hasn't heard from anyone that they won't be here. So, it looks like we would have a full complement. Okay, Carol.
I'd like to ask that Jay Franklin be part of those discussions too.
Sure. All right, we're ready to go to break. Thank you all. It's not a fun one. We didn't get a sense of accomplishment here tonight, but we'll get there. All right, we're going to move to chair's report, chair's appointments. I don't have any appointments tonight, but I got a couple of items I want to mention. First one is kind of fun. I was passed a note tonight to remind us that our public information officer, Marsha Lynch, is celebrating a birthday. Happy birthday, Marsha.
What are we talking about? Sorry. Somebody sing. Leslin, where's Leslin? She's got the voice. Oh, well.
We had a visit this morning from the new president of Cornell University, Beth Garrett. She came and spent about half an hour with three of us, myself as chair, the vice chair, and Martha as the chair of the Academic Development Committee and former chair. And it was a cordial meeting. We mentioned several items. We talked about TCAT, talked about the airport. We talked certainly about housing. We talked about working together and how the tech campus affects us, how we can work together and their efforts to help us with lobbying for airport and other things. If I can make a judgment, I thought she was very personable, very down to earth. She was quick and smart and well-briefed, and I was very impressed. And hopefully you'll all get a chance to meet her as well in the future.
Was she accompanied by anyone?
I'm sorry?
Was she accompanied by anyone?
She came with Joel Molina and Gary Stewart. They were the ones that set the meeting up. But I wanted to tell you that she made that effort.
And she supports Travis Hyde.
Well, not exactly. There was a meeting last week. There was an investigation of the intersection at Aurora Street and State Martin Luther King Street, where the tragic accident happened a year ago at Simeon's. And thanks to Senator Charles Schumer, who requested it, New York State Department of Transportation held an all-day workshop. I guess it's a workshop. It's for their people from different areas of the Department of Transportation to look at that intersection and to make a report. We don't have the report yet. Some of us that were on the truck safety group that came together, thanks to our Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton and Mayor Savanti and me and Fernando de Aragon and some of the other folks that are working on this truck safety thing. They will have recommendations as to how to look at that intersection in the future. Meanwhile, Department of Transportation is also looking at other things such as areas where trucks could get off the road ahead of hills in order to check their brakes, for example. And we can expect to hear more about that in the near future. So it's been about a year, but things have gone along, and we can expect things like better signage and other efforts to try to make those kind of things that happened at the bottom of State Street Hill less likely to happen. And the last thing I wanted to mention was that our Bicentennial Commission has been meeting. We had a meeting last week. And we are looking at things such as what a budget will look like for activities in 2017. We've been looking at various, there have been various subcommittees looking at things like the possibility of a logo, the possibility of some long-term kind of things that we can do, such as having historic markers around the county. We could add to some of those on houses and or locations. We have some good people on that commission, and we'll be bringing more in the future. But I wanted you to be aware that we are having monthly meetings, although we won't meet in August, and we will have more things to report as things move along toward 2017. Any questions I can answer, or we'll move on? Let's go to Joe Mariana and have a report from our county administrator.
Thanks, Mike. And if you thought the first half of the meeting was fun, wait until you hear my report tonight. I've got a couple of updates and items for you, and then I want to talk about our mid-year budget update. First of all, just reminders, we have a retreat this Thursday evening at 5:30. I'm sure Leslin was going to talk about that as well as a part of her report, but we're going to talk about the climate survey. So it's this Thursday at 5:30 at the Health Department on Brown Road. I think it's going to be an interesting and productive session. Paul is going to be our lead facilitator, but we've got a lot of work to do, and I think good things can result. I wanted to let you know that, so, Carol?
22nd or 23rd?
23rd.
Oh, okay, thank you.
All of you probably know Andrea Gibbs in my office. She's been with us for over 5 years. She is the picture of professionalism and grace in the office, and she's retiring. And she, this week will be her transition week because we have hired a replacement for her, who you will get to know as well. Her name is Janica Moskal. She started this week. Her previous position was with the Legal Assistance of Western New York. So she was in a neighborhood legal aid office in Bath, New York, and she is joining us again this week. So I'm sure you'll get a chance to know her soon.
Joe, please say her name again.
Janica Moskal. Last item, and this has been reported, Marcia had this, but it's worth reiterating. We were again named one of the top 10 digital counties in the United States by the National Conference, the National Association of Counties. Maureen Reynolds was in Charlotte to accept the award. She certainly is among those people responsible for us being among the top 10 digital counties in the United States. So with her efforts and Greg Potter and his department and many others in the county, we are at the very top level of technology and productivity-enhancing technology in our county. So we greatly appreciate the work that they have done there. I want to spend a few minutes, really in the meat of my report, to give you a mid-year budget update. This has been a sobering week in terms of financial information that we have received and are we beginning to work with. We've been talking about sales tax since the beginning of the year. And you may recall we had a difficult first quarter, and we said, hang on, because often the first quarter is really not an indicator of what's going to happen the rest of the year. We said, hang on until the second quarter. At that point, we'll have a better sense of how we're doing at the midpoint. Well, the second quarter came in last week, and our receipts are down for the second consecutive quarter this year. I think it's the first time that we have had two consecutive down quarters since at least the recession. So it's a pretty significant turn of events. Our receipts are currently lagging a little less than 3% behind last year. So if we continue on this path, we seem to be on a course that may lead us to a shortfall of somewhere between $500,000 and $800,000 in sales tax receipts. Now remember, we're not the only recipient of sales taxes in this county, so others will be affected by this as well. So I think Rick is probably a little more optimistic in his projection of the sales tax than I am, but I'm frankly very concerned about where we are right now with sales tax receipts. And again, particularly as we look at some other items in our budget that are also presenting some challenges. We have our 24/7 departments, so law enforcement and DOER, are experiencing some overtime pressures. We expect that they will finish over budget in their overtime accounts this year. And there's one other one, the pre-K special ed program. Costs there are well in excess of budget. I believe there were new rates that were developed last year by the state that are affecting those numbers. But as we sit, there's a projected negative in that account as well. Now, not everything is negative. There are some areas of the budget that we expect to finish in the black this year. We've talked about some of the DSS mandates that seem to be tracking pretty well. So there are some offsetting things that we are looking at. But the bottom line is, it appears right now as if we don't take mitigating action, we could face a shortfall in 2015. So in the knowledge that we face this potential situation, again, we don't want to overplay it, but certainly we need to acknowledge it. We have sent a message to department heads directing them to do the common sense things. So we have said to them we want to limit overtime to emergency events and critical functions. Vacancies are certainly the one thing that we always have to use to control spending. So we've talked about, call it a flexible freeze on hiring, where until we get at least the third quarter, we would limit internal movement of personnel to internal fills and promotions. So if a position is vacant at one level, we would allow departments to promote into that title, but at some point in that process to leave a position vacant so we realize the savings from a vacant position. And I'll be talking to department heads about the nuances of that, because it's trickier than it seems. It's management of that is relatively complex. What do you do with jobs that are currently in the hopper to be filled and so forth? So I'll be working with department heads on that. We've said, again, the common sense things, restrain your discretionary spending. So we haven't slammed on the brakes. We don't think that it rises to that level, but we've certainly tapped the brakes a little bit to make sure that we are taking appropriate action given some things that we see on the horizon this year. I'm going to go back to the sales tax thing. I think when we put that sales tax budget together for 2015, if anything, we thought we were being conservative in the way we projected it. I remember a conversation about the budget saying maybe we can push it up a little bit to help. And, you know, that wasn't an inappropriate suggestion at that time. I don't know that any of us expected to see two consecutive down quarters in sales taxes. And by the way, that doesn't separate us from most counties in New York State. Everybody is in the doldrums, not everybody. Many counties are in the doldrums right now. So we are certainly not alone in this. So it's not the kind of report that we like to make. The good news is that our radar screen is, I think, better than it's been in some time. We're able to see these situations coming and take reasonable actions to respond to it. So that's where we appear to be mid-year this year. Now, that not only affects this year, but it also affects the way we project into next year, and it affects the 2016 budget. We'd assumed very modest growth in sales tax for next year based on what we saw in the first quarter, and I think we'll need to dial that down even more. So we probably will assume less sales tax money for next year than we had originally proposed in the or put in the retreat budget. We'll have to look carefully at the overtime amounts to see if that is a systemic situation that we have to allocate resources for next year. So it casts a different light on next year. It's going to be more difficult to do the things that we had talked about doing in the 2016 budget than we thought. You also saw today's news that the tax, the inflation factor in the tax cap is going to be very low. That was released today by the state comptroller. It is less than 1%. If there's good news, and I'm trying to find it, but if there's good news, we assume zero when we put our projection of a cap together. So if anything, it gives us a tiny bit of maybe increase in our tax cap. And it's not the only element in the calculation of the cap. You recall that they recognize what we call new lumber, real assessment growth because of actual increases in property, not just inflationary increases, but new construction. So there's that factor that we still haven't gotten a number for yet. And then also there's this weird sales tax credit factor where the amount that the towns take in sales tax credit has to be factored in. So no matter how those factors go, we will still have an unusually low cap for 2016. So, it's tough to bring news like this at this point in time, but best we all have a shared understanding of where we are. And again, be assured that we'll be talking to the departments about appropriate ways to tap the brakes on where we are right now. And let's hope that in October, when we get the next sales tax report, we see an improvement in those numbers. So that's my
dark cloud. We have questions out there. We've got Mike Sigler, Martha Robertson, Peter Stein.
Hey, Joe, I was wondering, does any of that have to do with just the falling price of gas and oil?
No, that's a prevailing theory. So NYSEC, right after these numbers were released, quick round robin of what may be affecting the numbers, and one of the theories is lower gas prices. It's usually, when you look at the sales tax, it's usually driven by a couple of things, durable goods, cars, and given the importance of energy and gasoline, that's really a third important part of it. So buy a car if you're thinking about it.
Martha.
Joe, there's also something about you can carry over a delta between where you are 1 year and the tax cap. Do we have any of that allowance?
We do, and that's been factored in. Remember, we had projected 1.3% as our cap. So that does include rollover from last. We didn't spend all of our cap last year, so we're bringing that forward.
Okay. So as George W. Bush said after 9/11, everybody go shopping.
Everybody go shopping.
Peter Stein.
My question was almost, I think, maybe answered, but I'll try it again. Are you really sure that this is not a fluke for us and that this is a general trend?
It's kind of bumpy across the state. I think upstate is down. Upstate is essentially flat. There are a number of counties. I think the majority of the counties are in the negative. There's some. Onondaga County is up. I think Schuyler County is up. I'll be happy to share the list with people. But the general trend is at best anemic. Many counties are down.
Jim Dennis.
Peter, on the NYSEC site, today, they listed 26 counties who were in the same boat that we are at this point, and they were upstate, mostly upstate counties.
Thanks. Carol Chalk.
So, Joe, one of the things that you've been really good at is we've been going through and you've figured out ways to build into our budget structural ways to make sure we have money for the different needs. And we are sort of, I see us as partway through that process. You know, we've spread, for example, stuff into the capital budget over time rather than being stuck each year having to argue about program money for certain things. And we've done that for some and not others. So just as you're putting together the budget, are there ways that you are trying to think through how to take that into account if we're going to have to tighten our reins as a county? How do we make sure that those who haven't already gone through that process of figuring out how to lock in longer-term money don't get short shrift?
Well, the only thing that we've locked in
my mind tend to be people things.
The other thing that we've locked in by policy is our capital spending, and that goes up by 0.5% of levy every year to create capacity to pay for infrastructure. Nothing else has a lock-in like that. I think, Carol, you give me an opportunity to say something I should have, which is I am absolutely dedicated to make sure that we maintain the current level of effort. But I think our first commitment is to sustain existing levels of service. That was something that was kind of the first priority when we talked at retreat, and then we talked about maybe having the capacity to go above that. I think it's, I hope, and I haven't looked at all the numbers yet, but I'm hoping that it's really that group of things that go above maintenance of effort that we may have to look again at that may not, I might not be able to fund it under the goals. But again, I'm dedicated to figuring out a way to make us be able to maintain current levels of service.
Martha, you had another question?
Yeah. At public safety yesterday, I don't want to steal Nate's thunder, but we also heard that not just the overtime expenses are higher than expected, but the board-out costs.
Board-outs are up, you're right.
And I'm reminded of the whole conversation a year ago about are we doing enough on alternatives to incarceration and make sure that we have really done everything that's possible. And I think that would be, even though that, like, if we need to add something into that program or whatever that effort is, whether it's OAR or day reporting, I think that's one of those cost savers, even though you're spending more in the short term. So I know that might seem counterintuitive, but I think we really, really owe it to ourselves to look hard at that, even in a bad situation like this.
Thank you, Joe. Let's go to report by the county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
I was just going to say no report, but after listening to Joe, I was thinking about that expression, no news is good news. So I was thinking I got good news. No report.
We need good news.
Moving right along. Now the person we have to blame for all this is our finance director, Rick Snyder.
I was going to take the next 45 minutes and explain the numbers that drove Joe's report, but we'll be looking at the sales tax report first, and then I'll end up with a brief review of our recent bond sales. If you turn in your red folder, you'll see your sales tax distribution summary for June. If you remember last meeting, we presented to you the last 3 months all at once. To catch up, we were sharing with you March, April, and May. And at that point in time, in April and May, it looked like the second quarter was beginning to come back just a bit, but we were very cautious until we got the final quarter results. Before you tonight, on your sales tax distribution summary, we can see the results of June. And if you look at the top of the report, in the one to the third column, you can see the percent change just comparing June of this year to June of last year was a negative 9.9%. So that's one of our worst months, is seeing just the month of June compared to last June, down 9.9%. If you go over and look at the year-to-date figures in those columns on the right, go down to the county section, you can see that as of the end of June, the year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion total $15,910,537, compared to $16,336,768 in 2014. This represents a decrease of $426,231 year over year, or 2.61%. So that's very close to what Joe was referring to earlier, that when we're looking at the year-to-date comparison, where we are right now in time compared to last year at the same point in time, we're down 2.61%. He rounded it up to 3. So I am bringing you a lower number than Joe, so I'm bringing you better news. It's getting better already, Joe, just as I sit here. But and then if we look at the next report, which is the historical report that shows all the activity from 1997 right up to date, I know the print's getting smaller and smaller as we add years, but we can look at the comparing quarter to quarter. And if you look at the second column, which is the county-only share, and this is a column we always focus on, the county's portion of sales tax for the second quarter alone was $8,379,769 compared to $8,551,329 in 2014. So if we look at it quarter to quarter, we have a decrease of 2.01%. So the quarter, our second quarter compared to last year's second quarter was down 2%. So that's not quite as bad as the month of June, which by itself was down 9%, but the quarter, which is April, May, June, compared to last year, was only down 2%. And I also like to remind everybody that we're comparing most of the time to last year's actuals. So last year's actuals was the highest quarter, all four quarters, and the highest year on record for the county. So we are using a very high measuring stick, maybe even an aberration, to see our sales tax that high. But even though we were down 2% for this quarter, it is still the second highest second quarter on record compared to last year being the highest second quarter. So I don't like to see us losing ground, and we do have to make these modifications to our budgets going forward. And a lot of the forecasting that we do during the budgeting season, which we have our budgeting hats on now for 2016, a lot of that's predicated upon the actual figures of the year that we're in, and then we're guesstimating the whole next year for 12 months. So, you know, we're really looking down the road almost 18 months in a lot of these cases. And so it's sometimes a bit of a test to see if we're being conservative or if we're not being as conservative as we could be. I found since I've been here that we've always been quite conservative in the budgeting the figures. But as we go forward into 2016, I agree with Joe, we may have to flatten that out even more as we look for 2016. So those are my basic remarks on sales tax. I always like to be a bit optimist because our third and fourth quarters are always our strongest quarters. Questions?
All right, we have Kathy, then Peter.
Thanks. My apologies if this was explained in the past or anything, but is there always that big percentage variation from the outside the city? In the drop, it makes it look significant, like they were really holding it up, let's say, last, what is this compared to last June?
Like the 15% that they were down?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an astounding high number, you know, and the city of Ithaca was only at 3.5. We're more in the middle at the 9 to 10%. But obviously, these numbers are fairly high. We're usually, you know, we usually only bring deviations from quarter to quarter or month to month that are 2 and 3%. So when you see things in the double digits, it is very odd.
Something that anybody can guess that was driving that?
Well, one of the things that Mike said was, how does the gas and fuel allocation play into this? And NYSAC did put out figures this week and showed county by county their best estimate on how much is derived by Tompkins County, and that's about 8.5%. So if fuel prices drop 25% compared to what they were last year or the year before, you know, and that affects 8% of your gross receipts, you know, you're going to see maybe a 2% drop, or you're going to see some kind of significant drop in your overall sales tax collection. But the state does help, quote, help, from time to time in trying to explain what's driving it. But nobody really knows. Every area is different. Every county is different. Everybody has a different mix of industry, farming, what have you. And so we really have to look at the national economy probably as part of the driving force behind it also. And that's not had any, you know, real significant growth that would help us for retail sales and consumption figures.
Peter?
I'm intrigued now. I wonder if you could let us see on a table exactly how much it does change, you know, over for all the quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Over the year for, you know, a couple of years or something.
Yeah, that would I would like to see a good demonstration.
I mean, a graph is hard to look at. They're so small, 2%.
We'll make numbers, you know. But I think it would be easy to show on a graph.
Down 1%. That just to see a list of them to see what the how much it varies in general.
And Peter's suggestion is good too. And what we do get from the state at the end of every quarter is what we call the adjustments. And the adjustments are something that the state does because they always have these ongoing cases that are being decided on who gets sales tax money paid back due to overcollection or who hasn't paid enough. So in any given quarter, you could have a huge negative adjustment, which we had this quarter. It was like $350,000 or something like that. And that negative adjustment, we just book it on the cash basis on our books here for the county. So they're making up to us overpayments that were paid to the county over the last 5 years, four quarters per year, or five years. So over the last 20 quarters, they're making these adjustments. Now, some quarters, we get a positive adjustment. We actually get more money than what was collected because we're getting a positive adjustment for prior periods. But in this particular quarter, as bad as it was already, we also got a negative adjustment on top of it. And that's how the state adjusted at the end of every quarter. So sometimes, no matter how good your measuring stick is, you can be off a percent or so just based on how the state has awarded you adjustments from another quarter.
I mean, that's such a large part of our revenue. You have to keep, and if there is generally, you know, fluctuations in it, that just means you have to keep a higher amount of money in your reserve so that you can deal with them, even if there is no general decrease in economic activity.
Well, next month, I'm glad you brought that up. If everything goes according to plan on August 4th, we should be presenting you with our financial report for last year, and you'll see a fairly nice increase in our reserves in the general fund. So that's more good news, Joe. We're almost even here.
All right, and move on.
The last report is, I handed out on top of your folders. I brought it over with me. Is a report on the sale of the bonds. We just had a huge bond and band offering that went out and sold and closed on July 10th. So I thought I'd give this to you so you could take it along with you because it lists all the projects. I'm not going to go over it at the bottom of this short little report. But we sold bands, which are bond anticipation notes, on July 10th. And that $1,350,000 band issue sold at 0.7619%. So that's the interest rate that we pay on the short-term money for 1 year for the bands. It was sold to TD Securities. That's the same company that happened to buy our bands over the last 2 or 3 years, or as long as I've been here. And these are notes with a maturity of 1 year. And these particular bands were issued to finance the Pine Tree Road construction project. Just for your comparison, I showed in the next paragraph what the bands sold for over the last 3 years. You can see that it's gradually been going up. In 2014, we sold bands at 0.2736%. And then the year before that, it was at 0.182%. And in 2013, we sold bands at 0.358%. So the interest rate that we paid this time, near about 0.75%, is quite a bit higher than what we paid in the past. Still a very good rate, but higher because of the way the interest rates have been creeping up in the market over the last 6 months. This rate ensures that our band interest payments for 1 year amount to $10,228.50. Now, the big money, the sale of the new money bond, or the sale of new money bonds, I call it new money bonds because most of the projects are for new projects, but we actually paid off some bands with the bond issued that amounted to $9,720,000. We still kept our AAA1 rating with Moody's. And Raymond James was the company that bought our bonds this time. The bonds are for 15 years, and the interest rate at 2.715 compares with previous interest rates of 2.414 in 2014. In 2013, the rate we paid for bonds was 3.399%. And in 2012, we floated new money bonds at 1.87% for 15 years. So you can see we're right in the middle there. That's not neither high nor low, but right in the middle. Rates are still low. It should be low for the next couple of months, but I see them as, if you've been following what the Federal Reserve has been saying, they're going to ratchet them up probably before the end of this year. It's still a good time, though, for governments to be refinancing debt issuances, but we've refinanced all the ones that we could as of the end of last year in November. And then I just listed the project there. The first four projects are the projects that make up bands that we had from last year, short-term notes that we refinanced. You see money for road and bridge and some building projects there totaling $3.7 million. All those bands were redeemed, and we refinanced them with the long-term bonds. The last group of projects, starting with facility projects, going down through a whole lot of road and bridge and building projects, solid waste projects, total $5.9 million. Those are brand new bonds, and we'll finance those projects. And I think we did pretty good all in all, the way the market has been with these two issuances. So if there's any questions on this.
Martha.
Yeah, did you say our bond rating is AAA1?
AA1.
AA1, okay. Thanks.
We keep trying for that extra A, though.
Yes, we did. Joe and I went through an exhaustive review, just like we did in the prior years, and we did all our homework and did the data collection and went through. Joe did a marvelous job of bringing his economic review to them, and we supported it with all the numbers, but there's a few things, and I think we spoke about this last year, but that are really out of our control. We've done just about everything we can financially to bolster our bottom line, to show our healthy fund balance, to show how well this county is really being managed. But there are some things like income per capita. There's not much that we can do to change income per capita or the size of your county, just the population itself. You really can't change some of those demographics and those statistics. And those are the things that keep us from growing. But there are no AAA governments. Isn't that what they told? Right now, at this point in time, there are no AAA counties in New York at this time. And we're one of four with the second highest rating.
All right. Carol?
Yeah, on that latter, on the income per capita, have we looked at how the capita gets defined? If students are defined as...
Oh, they're definitely in that group,
numbers,
so that's why it...
But
it
they, are, by down. Definition, are at a point in their lives when they don't have an income. Whether we can do anything. Whether there's any wiggle room on the definition there.
All right. Can we move on? Rick, thank you for
that. Yeah, that's all my report. Thank you very much.
Report and for putting the best face on some not-so-great sales tax figures. Are there resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Peter Stein.
Yeah, I'd like to add a resolution that was passed a mere 3 hours ago at that other table. It's in the red folder. And it's an authorization to increase hours of community health nurse, children with special needs, health department. And it passed unanimously.
That's Resolution G. You're moving it. Is there a second to add that?
Yeah, I'm moving it.
Seconded by Jim Dennis. All in favor of adding it, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. That will be added. All right, let's do the consent agenda. We have some appointments. Out of the advisory boards, or to the advisory boards, to the Home Ownership Oversight Committee, we have Diana Drucker. To the Planning Advisory Board, we have Joseph Bowes, Ruth Hopkins, and Rod Howe. We have Resolution A.
Wait, off.
That's off, okay. And that's the only resolution on consent. So can I have a motion for the consent agenda, please? Martha, seconded by Dooley. All in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. All right, let's go to standing committees. Health and Human Services Committee, Peter Stein.
Well, we haven't had a meeting since the last time we reported, except for the one that we had at that table over there. So I have nothing else to add.
Questions for Peter? Can you move your resolution, Peter?
Yes, I'd like to move the resolution that we just added to the agenda.
Resolution G. Is there a second? Seconded by Will. Discussion? Dan Klein.
Do we know if this employee involved was given the choice of increasing hours or not?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
This resolution concerns increasing hours for one employee. Do we know if this employee was given the choice of whether they wanted to increase or not?
I can't answer that question. I haven't asked.
Okay. Let's see if we can find out an answer for you afterwards. Ready to vote on this? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed, that's unanimous. All right, let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Dave McKenna is the chair.
F and I met Monday, July 13th, and we had a presentation from Jeff Smith, the highway super, to show us all pictures of county highway damage during the rainstorm, and that was quite eye-opening. And we also have a report from Joe Mariana on various projects. And, for example, Human Services Building is nearing completion and is expected to be done by the end of August or before. Public Safety Building by the end of the year. Mental Health Building design is now underway, and that's expected to be completed by the end of the year. And, Joe, if you could help me out on this one, the courthouse, I can't remember what date you put on there.
Well, we'd actually talked about roofs for a couple of buildings, and we have since decided, because the bids came in very high, to postpone those and rebid them later on with some other roofs, trying to get a better price for those.
Thank you. And with that, I have the one resolution that was pulled, authorization to execute supplementary construction financing agreement number 2 with New York State Department of Transportation for covered bridge preservation project in the town of Newfield, and that's document ID 5714.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dan Klein. Discussion, Carol, you pulled it?
Yeah, I just pulled it to speak in favor of it, since I sometimes speak against and vote against bridge projects. I just wanted to point out that this one, for me, meets the standards of meeting existing policy, nice scale, nice design, support of the municipality, and high leveraging of the federal and state dollars. So I support it, and I wanted to point that out.
Mike Sigler.
Michael, I'd like to make a recommendation that all our county bridges are changed into bridges, you know,
covered bridges.
Just for Carol's sake, that would be one.
Would that be one lane or two?
Bridges of Tompkins County. Julie?
I actually have a couple of questions. What is the fire suppression system going to be?
I don't actually know.
And the insecticide, fungicide coatings, what are they?
Basically, I believe that's pressure-treated material that the thing is constructed
with. Pressure-treated lumber being used over water?
Yeah, I believe it is. I'm not positive. But if Jeff was here, he could tell you probably, but I can't for sure. But I will say that the change on this was state funding, state Marcicelli funding, whichever, was increased to $50,000, which is the reason for this particular resolution. That decreases the county's share by about $33,000.
Ready to vote? All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Dave. Economic Development Committee, Martha Robertson is our chair.
Thank you, Mike. No reports. We haven't met. The committee hasn't met since the last legislature meeting, but I have two resolutions that are carried from the previous meeting. Resolution D, it's document 5698, making a negative declaration of environmental significance in relation to resolution number 5697, award of a tourism capital grant for the Lake Street Public Park Enhancement Project. So moved.
There's a second. Seconded by Peter Stein. Discussion. Julie Kiefer.
Martha, I'll be voting against this. The main reason being that the most recent information from EPA on soil samples there indicate that they don't have the results back. And I think that that sampling and awaiting of results all took place after, well, I know it took place after the city did their review, but I'm not sure if it is in progress during when the county did its or not, but I think I'm not in a position to say it's okay at this point. And I'd like the minutes to show that.
Okay, we didn't hear anything about that at the committee, and I understand that there was some conversation among at the conservation advisory council or something, but nobody contacted me from TCAD or the city or anything. So if somebody now has a problem with it, even though it's gone through the city processes, nobody told me. So I don't have any reason that I know of that it should be pulled or delayed. So
I just got this information recently. So
Will?
As Martha knows, I had been called by a member of the city's Natural Areas Commission who had been concerned that the city process did not this is a natural area. It's under the city code. It's defined as such from the sidewalk to the falls. And for some reason, it's my understanding that the city did not involve the commission in the process of reviewing this project. I completely support what we're doing. I voted for in committee. But out of respect for the concern that it was raised to me, I'll be voting against this now. I would be happy to vote for it another time.
Well, Harold Chalk? Oh, I'm sorry. You can respond.
Yes, if anybody from the natural area, you know, from any of these committees has a concern,
it would have been really good to have brought
it. Come to the microphone, whatever.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand the time frame in which we learned about the potential hazards to the site relative to when it came to the committee.
Martha?
In my information, we haven't learned that. We don't have anything. If there's EPA report, nobody has.
It was in the Ithaca Journal recently, I believe, or one of the papers, just recently, since I came to the committee and heard you talk about this. So I'm just wondering, I'll also ask the question, if it is an issue, my understanding about where this project is located is not where the toxic, potentially hazardous runoff.
This has nothing
came
to do with the lead at the bottom of Ithaca Falls.
It would be, that this is closer to the road. So this may not be an issue, but I'm just wondering, is there a time factor here so that we couldn't wait a month and find out the answers on these rather than vote on it now? Because I'd like to be able to vote for it, but if there's questions about whether it just needs more study I don't think that it would change the outcome of doing the project. It's just the whether, how much monitoring or mitigation might need to be done.
I see Ed Marks out there. Ed, is there anything you can add to help us here?
I can't hear you, Ed.
Is the mic on?
No, it's not.
It's on? Yeah.
Okay. My understanding, though I can't confirm it for certain times, is the first two we showed you tonight, which you're referring to, is that the light contamination is further upstream toward the fault. It's not the site, but I can't confirm that.
This is right next to the road.
Dennis?
Can I follow? I'm going to call the question.
Oh, come on. That's ridiculous.
I have a call the question. Seconded by Mike Sigler. The question goes to a vote. Call.
I think I still had the floor asking questions about this.
We thought you were done. I recognize Jim. He called the question. I guess you could vote against calling the question.
Just process-wise, I think I still was talking, and even as you were calling on Jim, I said, wait, I still have the floor. So I would ask forbearance of my colleagues to let me.
Jim and Mike, can we let Carol finish?
No. All right, I mean, the planning director just gave a legitimate answer, and, you know, I don't see that we need to talk about it anymore.
All right, all those in favor calling the question, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That failed. So we continue discussion. Carol?
So I'm just still trying to understand whether there's a way we could just postpone this for a month just to make sure we have the right answers.
You have to move to postpone.
I'd like to be able to vote for this. It is my belief that this area is not the part that's impacted. This is the tourism program that brought this.
Please make a motion.
I have further questions here. Is this tourism dollars that this?
Yes.
So it
yes.
would have been up to the tourism program to understand that they should ask the city, not us, to ask that.
The city is the applicant.
The city didn't do a coordinated review with the county, so the city did its own assessment, and the county is doing its own assessment.
Was it the same department of the city
that
asked
for... If I can ask, where did the Ithaca Journal report come from?
I don't know if it was the Journal or somewhere else, but I saw this somewhere publicly. The applicant is the city of Ithaca. Okay. I'll support this, but...
All right, so
I'm sorry
can we go
they
to
didn't
vote?
Get coordinated ahead of time.
Resolution? Julie?
Well, I will move to postpone it until when does the Natural Areas Commission meet?
It's early August, but I don't know the date. I can try to find that out. But I'm sorry.
Lay it on the table until we get the information.
For a month.
You want to postpone till when?
I didn't know whether it would
be. Or you want to make a motion to table?
I wasn't sure whether it should be the first or second meeting of. Whether it should be the first meeting of August or not, I wasn't sure. Because I don't know the...
Well, I need to know what you want to do. You're proposing to do something, so
we can vote on it.
I guess I would lay it on the table.
Are you moving the table?
Indefinitely.
Does that require a second, John?
Yes.
All right, we need a second to lay on the table. I see one from Mike Sigler. All right, then we have to proceed directly to a vote. All those in favor of tabling this resolution B, raise your hand.
I'd move to amend. Can I amend that?
No, we're moving. We have to move to vote on the motion. All those in favor of tabling it, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3. Everybody else? Okay.
I'd like to...
So it's not tabled. Carol.
I'd like to move to postpone this for 1 month. No, it's not the same thing. If you postpone, it's you're postponing for a specific period of time where tabling could disappear.
Is there a second to postpone for 1 month? Julie Kiefer. Discussion? All those in favor of postponing for 1 month, please raise your hand. One, two. Those opposed? That's everyone else. So that fails. We're back to the main motion. Kathy?
I'd like to call the question.
I have another motion to call the question. Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Dennis. All those in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have two opposed. All right, we're going to move to a vote on the on Resolution B. All those in favor, Resolution B, making a negative declaration of environmental significance in relation to the next resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
One, two, three, four, five, six. Are those opposed? We have two opposed. Three opposed, I'm sorry. All right, that passes. Let's go to C.
Resolution C, document 5697, award of a 2015 tourism capital grant to the Lake Street Public Park Enhancement Project. I so move.
Second. There's a second. Peter Stein. Discussion? Martha?
Well, there was a question about the timing, and I do know that this was supposed to have come with the whole bucket of other tourism capital grants that we approved at least a month ago, and it had been delayed, I think, for the seeker. So it's already been delayed, and I don't know if they're planning to start construction this construction season. But, oh, here you go. Construction is anticipated for September 2015. That's packet page 29. So I assume they need to get going.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on this one? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have two opposed.
Put me as a yes.
You're a yes. So I've got Will and Dooley opposed. Is that correct? Or are you raising your hand for something else?
No.
All right. Two opposed. And all right. Anything else, Martha?
Just that our next meeting is Monday, August 3rd at 3:30.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd ask that the minutes reflect my reasons for opposing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Government Operations Committee, Dan Klein is chair.
The Government Operations Committee has not met since our last meeting. Our next meeting is 1 week from today, July 28th, 3:30, here in Chambers. Among other things, we will be hearing about what Schoharie County has to say about drones. Right, Julie?
Yes.
Okay, questions for Dan? Let's go to Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Dooley Kiefer is the chair.
I have no report.
Questions for Dooley? Charter Review Committee has not met since our last meeting, and we will meet again. I forgot what day. August 5th at 3 o'clock. Questions I can answer. Let's go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Dennis is the chair.
Our next meeting is July 27th, right here at 4 p.m., and that concludes my report.
Let's go to questions for Jim. Let's go to Nathan Shinagawa, chairs Public Safety Committee.
Yes, the Public Safety Committee meeting was on yesterday. My goodness.
I'm glad some of our committees have met. That's
yes,
nice.
Yes, we did meet. And we had a conversation about a number of items. And we did talk about the issue about overtime and then also board outs. We looked at the sheriff's report and had a discussion about fraud and scamming. Then we also looked at jail statistics, and we are asking for further detail on a number of items related to jail statistics because of some of the variability in some of the graphs. But the biggest thing that we talked about was the body camera policy. You probably read about it in the paper, or you could also go to the Ithaca Voice, and they summarize some of the issues. But I just want to let everyone know that this is a general order from the Sheriff's Department. So the way these work is that it is, we provide input But the sheriff, once he has his order, he issues the general order, and that essentially becomes the policy of the sheriff's department. And so so right now there was that policy. We had quite a bit of discussion about privacy rights of citizens. We also had discussions about citizens' ability to still record their own video. We talked about the storage of these videos and the accessibility of them. And I know that tends to be a big issue for folks. So, the way to basically answer that is that the footage is available to defense attorneys just as any other piece of evidence. If people want to be able to get request any of the footage that's taken, it goes to the Freedom of Information request process that we have, and it would be redacted like any other thing that you would require or that you would ask from law enforcement. And so obviously that would be up to Joe's discretion, and then the appeal is Jonathan Wood. One of the interesting things I thought about, I saw about the policy, is that anything that involves a shooting or a discharge of weapon at an officer or by an officer, when that happens, the videos, once the incident is over, the cameras have to immediately be taken by the presiding officer. And even though these videos, once they're, you really can't tamper with them, once they've been, you connect them to the server and they get uploaded automatically, but still, just to add to the, concerns that the community has, I thought that was a very good provision to add into the general order. Still not done yet because we're still trying to figure out the storage aspect of this and how we're going to store the footage. So it's still going to be a couple months, we're still aiming till the end of the year, but it may not be. But that's the hope. And I know hope is not a plan, but that's the plan.
Questions, Peter?
Yeah, I didn't. I want to ask a direct question that I didn't quite understand. Is it possible? Will it be possible for a citizen to go and say, "I want to look at all of the video cameras of Officer Jones in the past 6 months," or something like that, on a fishing expedition?
Right.
I've always been concerned about that. Okay.
That'd be a question for, I think, Joe and Jonathan, because if people wanted to get information in a Freedom of Information Act now, in a broad request like that, would they be able to do so?
No, they'd have to be much more specific than that.
So they would have to cite what, specific times or specific incidents?
Specific records that they're requesting, and again, if it's just a broad fishing expedition, that wouldn't pass muster.
Other questions? Thanks, Nate.
Let's
go to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslin McBean Claiborne is our chair.
Chair, I have no report except just to reiterate the reminder of Thursday the 23rd, 5:30, to the Health Department. We will be having our retreat, at which point we'll go over the results of the climate survey and next steps. What do we do next? That's it.
All right. I think we're down to minutes. Someone want to move July 7th? Peter Stein. Is there a second? Seconded by Dan Klein. Martha Robertson.
Yes, in your red folders is the second of the minutes that was my statement at the beginning of the meeting last time. And I asked Kathy to include this with showing some changes. It's a little bit faint, but basically it's to clarify a couple things. So, for example, I did not play a leadership role in the housing needs assessment. That was the first paragraph there. And I also wanted to make it clear that what I'd said about the two-year look back, that was in the change in the second paragraph. So I would like to move those changes that you see in your packet.
These are correcting your own comments.
Right. So that's a move to amend the minutes.
Is there a second? Second. For that. All in favor of that correction? Opposed? As corrected, we're ready to move the vote on the minutes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. All right. Any unfinished business? Guess not. Is there a motion to adjourn tonight?
Uh-huh.
Peter Stein with a high reach and seconded by whoever. Kathy Luz Herrera. All those
sure,
in favor?
I seconded it.
We're adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Good meeting.
Yeah.
Thank you to our staff.
But I did.
Here.
Yeah.